Oh, yeah, okay. That is my fault, not Pat, because...
No, no, I'm not faulting anybody.
Pat knew you were coming in, but Pat thought you were coming in just to talk about the book, and that's it. And I'm like, make sure you arrange everything with Jim to be the guest tomorrow.
Oh, cool.
No, but he felt bad, because then he calls me and he goes, I look like an idiot.
Oh, it's just that you're not across and the eyes are not dotted.
Hello and
heyo.
Welcome to the. Let me just. All right, hold on. I'm sorry. We're just here gossiping.
Are we starting?
Welcome
over?
To the Matthew Aaron Show. I am Matthew Aaron. Everyone just heard our gossip for like a minute there.
And
it was only. We're only like 50 seconds late.
Right.
Welcome to the Matthew Aaron Show.
I got to do a show for those stupid idiot fans. Oh, hi.
www.show.com at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter. It's the Matthew Aaron Show. You go to the search bar, you type the Matthew Aaron Show, you could click like and become one of our numerous followers on Facebook, where all our greatest stuff is. Oh, Pat said the conversation everyone heard was about Pat. And then we just laugh in his face on the air. Yeah, so we'll get to that story in a second. We got a bunch of funny stories to tell today before we have on Jim McCarron's our guest. But we're at also at Stitcher, the Matthew Aaron Show, where you can listen to us on the radio.
Right.
You can listen to us in your car on Stitcher. And we're here from Taste Chicago here in Burbank. Arlene Montaigne is a great, great Chicago food joint with the best deep dish pizza in town.
603.
Yeah, that's right. 603 North Hollywood Way.
That's right.
That's right. And so come out to Taste Chicago on Fridays. Like I always say, that's my sweet pepper and egg day, my Catholic day.
Your Lenten
day. I have a little
day,
clam chowder.
Even though you do not keep Lent.
No, but then I have a clam chowder. I have a sweet pepper and egg.
Yeah.
We have Jim McCarron today. We were just talking about how Pat Tobias... Okay, we weren't sure if we were going to have one guest or two guests today. Another guest got pushed back to next week, so we didn't know how to set up the show ahead of time. So we found out last second it's just going to be Jim, and Pat didn't know if Jim was going to be on the whole show or part of the show. So he hits up Jim like Jim didn't even know he was going to be here yesterday. Like he was asking Jim to be a guest.
Yeah.
And we were just laughing about how funny it was because Jim's been booked for like 2 weeks. But, you know... It's not really that funny,
no,
Pat. You shouldn't be that embarrassed.
You know what? Yeah. Okay.
But it was funny, too. Pat called me.
It worked
night.
Out.
He goes, I feel like an idiot.
Right. And that is a reasonable.
Yeah, I've done
impersonation
that to Pat before.
Of,
yeah. Yeah, right.
Pat.
Last night was interesting.
He's, yeah. Oh.
We had a killer day yesterday. First
we did.
Off, I need to make my New York Times correction of the week. Where last week we were talking about the pilot, which we're going to be talking about a bunch today because Jim is an executive producer on the pilot. And but we were talking about the pilot, and I was talking about how Lucy Lawless has, she's fun.
Yeah.
She's fun. And she had some drinks, and she's a good time, and she's a little aggressive, and we love her.
Yeah.
And... there were some people that were a little agitated with me because they thought I was ripping on her. And I said I was just making her sound like a good time. She's Animal House.
Uh-huh.
For one. She's like one Animal House.
Yes.
And
she's more National Lampoon than Merchant Ivory.
Yes, right. And we talked to Lucy yesterday, and it's all good. And Lucy just wishes death upon me, which means it's good. We're in a good place.
Mm-hmm.
Lucy usually just wishes death upon me. That's her in a good mood.
But she wishes death on everybody.
Right.
Like she walks out of her house.
If she likes
you.
You
know, if she likes you.
So we love Lucy. For everyone at home that thought we were disparaging Lucy, we love Lucy Lawless. She's great.
I'm not sure who, but...
That's our New York Times correction for the week.
Yeah. I love that. That's our correction.
Yeah, right.
Also, when I said the Japanese bombed Shanghai in 1933, it was 1932. And I want to say egregiously, I'm sorry. That was a terrible error.
And by the way, did you introduce yourself. Did you, Lee Capreas?
Lee Capreas, hello.
Yeah, yeah. Lee Capreas, as usual, joining me. Everyone knows Lee, though. So we go to this thing last night. L.A. Italia Film Festival's in town. My buddy Pascal Vicadamini, he comes over from Italy, and he puts together this free film festival of all these great Italian films. And the list this year looked phenomenal of Italian films. And I haven't been able to go by yet to watch them. But there were – and he showed some classics, too, because it's Al Pacino tribute year.
Al Pacino tribute, and also a tribute to the spaghetti westerns, not just the Sergio Leone ones, but the original Django films.
Sure,
and a number of other ones, so that's great.
And so every year there's like a theme. Spaghetti westerns are usually involved every year because that's what Italy does best is the western. Well, that's the most known for, I guess.
Yeah. And, you know, Fellini.
You're right. And no, fuck that guy. He never shows a Fellini picture. I've never seen a Fellini picture at Pascal's Film Festival.
Or, yeah.
Maybe they had a falling out.
They
Maybe
did.
Him and Fellini don't get along.
Yeah.
So this year's Al Pacino. Al was there Sunday night, and they honored Al, and they showed one of his films earlier in the day. Saturday, they got Godfather 2 going on. Mm-hmm. They have Woody Allen's film about Rome. You could skip that one. What else do they have? They have a bunch of things Saturday. I was like, I want to go Saturday. Saturday was like the day for me.
They had the animated film that you were sad you
I'm
missed.
I'm so mad I missed
it. Gladiator, like a DreamWorks type
Gladiators
thing.
In Rome or
right.
something. Yeah, and it takes place in the Colosseum. Mm-hmm. It looks very Shrek meets Gladiators.
Right, and a very little scene spaghetti western called Texas Audio, which I would have went to, but... and there
was that filmed by the guy that looks like from American Chopper?
There was one playbill where the guy looked like that.
The guy they're honoring Friday, and I forget
things,
his name, and I
feel
like a
goof. A couple of things by director Francisco Rossi, and blah, blah, blah.
So Pascal's a friend. He's like the greatest guy ever. Pascal asked me to come Sunday. I knew it was Pacino night. I knew they were going to be jammed to the rafters, right? I knew they were just going to be packed. So I decided... All right, I'm not going to go Sunday night because I don't want to be a burden on Pascal. I don't want him to feel like he has to catch up with me and stuff when he's got to worry about big Al Pacino coming in.
Yeah.
Little Al Pacino coming
in.
So I think Pascal really wanted to see me, and he's like, you must come Tuesday. And he sent me the same text four times. He goes, you must come Tuesday. You come Tuesday, Matthew. You come Tuesday. Come tonight. And I'm like, all right, I'm coming.
And he really does talk like Chico Marx.
Right.
Right.
I go, I'm going to come by, I'm going to see Pascal for 15 minutes, and we're going to leave. Because he's honoring last night Harvey Weinstein and Quentin Tarantino and Christoph Waltz, and they're all there, the whole Django cast and crew. And I go, we're going to come for 15 minutes, and we're going to leave. Little did I forget, because I thought I'm going to go see my friend, that Hollywood never starts anything on time, ever. And so we get there at 8:30 so we could be a little early and see Pascal. They're supposed to start at 9. 9 goes by, don't start. 9:15 goes by, still not starting. I don't think it started till we left, which was at 10:30. Interesting thing that happened, though, is throughout the evening, Pascal would come up to me on and off. And it was kind of funny because Pascal's like the roadrunner.
Right.
And he's always like running around. He's got his phone going and he's talking to everyone. So he would purposely come bump into us like every 15 minutes and talk up a storm.
Yeah. But he was a hot mess.
He was.
Every finger in a pie.
He was. He was. He was in control of everything. And by the way, really well. And by the way, this is the only free film festival I know of that you can go to.
And
every film is free.
Every film is free.
And it's Man's Chinese
Theater. And having
theater
it at the Chinese is just really, I think, an interesting place to have a free film festival
I know.
Of foreign films.
I think it's great.
Yes.
I think it's great. You can't go to a free film festival anywhere. And this is great. So at one point, Pascal is like leading all these people into like a back area. And Lee and I are making jokes that Pascal's like taking hot women and going to the back.
That's the green room or what it looked like was the pink room.
Right. And so we're making jokes because Pascal's a pimp and we're expecting that he's coming out like, you know, after making out with some broad and having like some rough Italian sex.
Right.
So we're making a joke. In the middle of one of the jokes,
love Italian style.
Pascal turns around and goes, And we were just like, he had two people with him, and one was, I think, Natasha Kinski and her husband.
Mm-hmm.
And he turns around, and we made a joke, oh, Pascal, it's three-way time.
Yeah.
And he turns around and he goes, Matthew, come to the back. And I'm like, oh, no.
And you're like,
oh, I'm not going to be a part of
this. Looking around, and I'm like, should I go with him or not? He's like, he said, just you.
Yeah, he goes, just you. Yeah. So, you know, I got picked for the four-way.
Okay.
He leads me to the back.
You can't have an around the world without. Go on. Go on.
Without the fifth?
Yeah. So he leads you back.
He leads me to the back. Not a word said, by the way, from the walk to this elevator. Not a word. It's just you're following Pascal. It's like top secret. Elevator door opened. Not a word. We get into this elevator. I'm standing there going, what the hell is going on? And by the way, I'm in jeans and my fourth favorite Hawaiian shirt and a leather jacket.
Yeah.
And a pair of Nikes.
And it's open. The top buttons are open.
Yeah, yeah.
Tom
chest
Selleck.
Hairs. Like, yeah. And so not a word still said. The elevator gets to this top floor penthouse-like area in Man's Chinese Theater. And it opens up. And all you see is there's Harvey Weinstein, there's Quentin Tarantino, there's Christoph Waltz, there's Mark Canton, who we've had on the show.
Franco Nero,
Dennis Christopher, they're all up there. And Natasha. So this was like really awkward because, you know, you and I, we don't like bothering celebrities at all. We don't like talking to them.
No.
We leave them alone.
Right.
If they're not doing the show or doing a project we're working on, I don't bother with them at all. So Pascal still doesn't say a word until he walks me over. He goes, go talk to Christoph Waltz, Matthew. I go, no. No, I will not. I will not talk to Mr. Waltz. So outside of these power players up there, it's just all beautiful women, like wall to wall. Like they're just there as props. That's what Pascal was doing. He's pulling all these beautiful women to go upstairs to like decorate the area.
Less said about that, the better.
And I got to tell you, Harvey, Quentin, all those guys didn't give a shit about the women being there. No, they would take pictures and stuff, but Harvey was in business mode. He was on his phone. He was talking. Very low-key, by the way. This was an interesting thing I learned about Harvey Weinstein. Not yelling, not screaming, not mean. He was very nice.
Yeah.
He was a gentleman to me, and he was just very low-key.
Soft-spoken?
Yeah, soft-spoken. That was the most bizarre part for me. So all those stories you hear about Harvey, I have the one to contradict it.
Yeah.
Maybe
he's doing yoga now.
Quentin was usual Quentin, running around as skinny of an area as he, you know, it was a real thin area.
Right.
Like, it was packed when you get all those women in there.
Right.
But Quentin's still doing his thing where he's like the Tasmanian devil going back and forth, having conversations, literally spinning while doing it, like a tornado. And Christoph Waltz was like the classiest gentleman I've ever seen. He's decked out in this, like, Gucci, Versace, I have no idea, beautiful suit, great shoes, perfectly coiffed. Like, it was like looking at a really gorgeous woman.
Gucci.
Right. I'm like, wow, this guy is good looking. Good for him.
Yeah.
So Christoph was there. Everyone's super nice. Now, at some point in time, I did get asked to leave. That's neither here nor there. We're not going to talk about it. I didn't do anything wrong. It was a misunderstanding, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But I did want to share with everyone this story that at L.A. Italia, everyone's there. David O. Russell was there the other day. I heard rumors De Niro was there. Like, everybody's there. You should stop by. It's at Man's Chinese. Support Italian culture and Italian film.
Won't, only for parking is the only thing you'll pay.
Yeah, parking is the only thing you'll pay.
You could stay there all day.
Because it's Oscar week, and they have the Hollywood Boulevard closed off.
Right.
So you do have to park and go into Man's through the underground garage.
Aren't we considerate even to lay out how you park when you get there?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we did. We are very considerate. Yeah. We give you the tips on here. And so please go support my guy Pascal. Please go support LA Italia. It's a great festival. It's great culture. And it's a good time. And it's free. It's free. I wish they – you made a great comment last night when we weren't talking to these beautiful Italian women that we had no business talking to.
Right.
And they were talking to us.
Yeah.
They were, like, into us. And I was kind of shocked.
Yeah.
And, like, they were foul-mouthed and,
they
like,
were funny.
Funny.
They were raucous.
What I love about the Italians, we were talking last night about the two things Italians do when they're around you. They have no filter.
No.
But when they do say something that's rude, it's not with venom. They don't do it with venom. It's, like, their way of joking.
They were charming.
They were charming, right. Yeah. And then the second thing they do is, We have two Americans like Lee and I, so they'll speak English to us for like 5 minutes, and then they'll have a side conversation in the middle of our circle in Italian.
We'll be standing there, and they're going to be like, and then they talk back to us, and then they'll say something like, this fucking girl, I hope she doesn't come over here.
This French girl.
I know.
And they hate French women.
Yes.
They hate French women.
Yeah.
They hate them.
Ah.
This one Italian girl came to us and she's like, I was going to give her a chance, but she's French.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah.
They don't like the French. So, yeah, but you made a good point that maybe man's Chinese should serve like noodles for like
one
Chinese
thing.
Option.
Yeah.
At least fortune cookies.
A little, yeah.
Those you could buy in bulk. You should get a fortune cookie with every popcorn.
At least one of those styrofoam things of noodles for all the struggling actors.
Right.
They're used to it.
You would have to pay for $4 for a cup of ramen.
Yeah, right.
For a cup of ramen.
And you get 30 cents.
But you could sit there literally all day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what are you going to do this weekend? Are you going to go see Dark Skies or are you going to go to the film festival? There's no great movies coming out this weekend. Anyway, Snitch is the other one with Dwayne Johnson. You could see that in video. Go to the film festival at Man's Chinese. It's free. It's free. You don't have to pay a dime. It's a good time.
Did we mention that?
Yeah, it's a good time.
Yes.
So, buongiorno.
Buongiorno.
And we love you, Pascal.
Ciao, Bello.
And we love you, and we encourage everyone to go do that. So that's what we did last night. And what else has been going on? We had all kinds of stories, I'm sure. What else is going on?
We you said the Lucy thing.
Yeah.
What
are we thinking of?
I don't know. I don't know what we can say anymore.
Yeah, right. We're here's the problem. There's always stuff going on. There's always so much we can say
on
the show.
We can say, I mean, some things that you just want to be polite to people, and some things are like etiquette and Hollywood etiquette. Other things
etiquette, man.
Other things are going to get us in trouble.
Yeah.
It's weird. I don't know if anyone listening, the quandary of doing a show like this where you want to try and speak your mind.
You want to be transparent.
But in some instances, you shouldn't, and in some instances, you can't.
Well, it's like with the pilot.
You can only do it to a degree.
Right. It's like with the pilot, and we got into a little trouble about talking about what Lucy was like at the pilot, even though she was great, and she's great on
she's
the pilot.
She's our hero.
She's great, right. She's
everything we said about her was because we love her.
Yes, we're your princess.
Yes.
And listen, there's only – but I try to be as transparent as possible because – a lot of people that listen to this show, they watch TV, they watch E!, they watch Access Hollywood, whatever. I think that's what the business is.
Right.
And they don't really write a lot of great business books anymore outside of Jim McCarron's, who's joining us soon. He has two business books that you're going to need to read. But listen, I mean, there isn't a lot of intel anymore on how the business works.
No.
And I like being transparent about it, even if that does maybe hurt us a little here and there with...
Right.
Connections and working with people.
Right.
So even with the pilot, and I told Carnahan this from day one, Carnahan's very transparent, obviously, too.
Yeah.
If you know Joe, he's too transparent. but listen, I mean, I do want everyone to know how this all works. I don't want people to come out here, think they're going to make it, and find out about the bullshit as they go along, and then not be able to handle it.
And
or
then,
have to move home,
right.
Or cry to sleep every night.
Right.
Because there is
yourself.
Some bullshit.
There is. And you, certain amount of those people you cannot do anything, but they're going to come out anyway because
sure.
They're just convinced that they have it.
That's my favorite thing. People that listen to the show, fans of ours, that don't think it's going to happen to them. Nothing that bad's happened to us.
No.
This is all everyday stuff that's going to happen to you, whether
everyday
you're
stuff.
An actor, writer, director, producer.
We're doing really good, by
yeah,
the way.
You're going to run into problems all the time. And a lot of people that listen to the show are like, oh, but that's just you guys. I'll be out there in a few months.
Right.
Okay, enjoy. Don't listen to me.
Yeah.
But don't come to me crying
right.
in like a year and say, man, you were right. I know I'm right. I know. I've been through it. It's every day, Lee and I will sit outside, I'll have an iced tea or a water, I'll have a beer, and we'll just say, man, there's a lot of bullshit in this business.
Yeah, boy. How was your day? Okay. Mine was okay.
My favorite now is this new thing that's been going on lately where people who have worked together and known each other for years calling me for other people's phone numbers.
Yes.
I won't name names.
No.
But people that have done numerous movies together, who go to parties together, whose friends are all in common, call me up and go, do you have so-and-so's number?
Yeah. And then not being able to get a hold of that person. This actually,
and then they come to Pat
Tobias. They couldn't get a hold of the person. They had to leave a message or something like that. And then calling us again, saying, complaining we couldn't get a hold of them.
Yes. Yes, right. Us, because I'm that person's messenger service.
Right.
Pat Tobias is that person's messenger service. Because everyone goes to Pat, and then they come to me. And then Pat brings everything to me. Mm-hmm. So I got to, you know, it sucks. I mean, that's just some of the, like, immature, like, high school bullshit that goes on out here. It's so high school.
It is.
Like, Jim used to talk about in class how there's a first floor out here. That's the building. And there's the people outside, and there's the people inside. Once you get inside, you can mingle with anybody, right?
Yeah.
And then I've also learned there's the reality corner. The reality TV people all hang out in one corner. The TV people in another. The movie people in another. The movie and TV people are kind of co-mingling now, but they don't really respect each other that much. And they all hate reality TV people.
Right.
They rather hang out with the porn stars that sneak in.
Yeah.
But,
well, who wouldn't?
But the funny thing is, that's how Jim looks at it. When you're first in this business, the way you're going to look at it, though, is it's one gigantic high school.
Yes.
It really is. You have cliques everywhere. Everything's cliquey.
Yeah.
Everything. And there are people that don't want you to be popular and put their foot on your neck and say, you're not going to rise any further than you are. I'm in control of where your future's going.
Right.
I'm going to let you know what parties you can go to and what parties you cannot. I mean, this is how the business can sometimes be, and you just have to have the balls to deal with it.
Decisions are made on a whim, last minute. They're, like, if you're up for a role, they might conceivably literally take one of those paper rose things that women have to determine whether a guy likes them. We should give him the role, 1, 2, 3.
Oh, the origami. Like,
the origami thing.
Yeah.
That's,
It is. It is like that.
I doubt.
The jocks talk about the nerds in a way where it's like they act like they respect them, but they really are like they don't get laid.
Right.
The nerds know they're doing better work than the jocks and keep quiet and don't talk shit around them because they think they're going to get beat up.
Right.
It's all the same.
It is.
It really is all the same. It's crazy. Let's bring on Jim, and if Jim's ready. Is
the
Jim
best,
ready?
The best
It's the best
intro.
Segue ever?
Yeah.
Speaking of business bullshit.
I love you. Totally summarizing Jim's canon in front of him and then bringing him up.
Well, everyone knows this is Jim McCarron's third time on the show, which ties only Joe Carnahan for most appearances on this show.
Yeah.
Peter Tolan needs to catch up. Jim, of course, is the writer of a book that we were plugging for months, and I hear it's doing very well, 103 Ways to Get into TV by 102 Who Did, plus me. That's Jim McCarron's book, which you can find on Amazon, I believe.
Amazon.com.
That's right, Amazon.com.
And available on Kindle as well.
Kindle. Is Kindle the Amazon thing, or is that – what's Kindle?
Kindle is the yes, to answer your question.
It's the Amazon, like, e-book thing?
Correct.
Because what's the Barnes & Noble one? Nook or whatever? Nook? Okay, I'm just making sure I get all these right.
I'm pretending I know when, in fact
– You don't either.
I really don't. I just know that it's available to download.
So if you do have a Nook, you could probably download it on that, too?
No.
If anyone has a Nook and wants to let me know, please do, and I'll update it throughout the show. If anyone has any kind of other e-book thing, and you could download Jim's book on it, please tell us.
I'd be curious.
Do we need to get Sean Astin here to explain it to you?
Sean, right. Sean Astin did explain to me how to use Twitter like I was 3 years old.
Right.
I mean, I'm stupid. But, I mean, that was a little above and beyond.
You're not stupid. You're just a Luddite like me.
A Luddite. Yeah. I like that.
Did
I like
it stick,
that.
By the way?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, it did. Well, a little bit. I still talk too much. But you can also find Jim's book if you go to the website on today's show blurb. The link is there. Just click on the link, and you can buy it. And how much is it, Jim? It's not expensive.
$15 for the print version and $2.99 for the ebook.
Come on, that's a steal right there. $3 for this book. And if you want to be in this business, it's very helpful. I read it, and I read it months ago when you were telling me about it. And I mean, and I read a lot of these stories you told in class. You would have,
correct.
Jim also would teach at DePaul.
Correct.
once a quarter a year, and he would come in and do a what do they call it? Guest lecturing. It's not really guest lecturing.
I was an adjunct. I am an adjunct.
Adjunct. Okay, you still are. Yeah,
I am. Yes.
You're going to do another term soon
here in L.A.
In L.A., you got in on
very
the
excited.
L.A. term.
Very excited to announce that here today.
That's a very smart move by DePaul. You want an L.A. guy to be in the L.A. term. That's good. That's smart. I got to say, so you told a lot of these stories in class. So, for instance, you won't give out the names of who they are, but they're all people who are successful in the business.
Well, some are newcomers who will be successful.
Right.
And they're successful in the sense that they wanted to come out here and they just made it. The fact that they arrived and that they're looking for work and that they're succeeding from day to day here in Hollywood in the new life makes them successful to me. So I did want their point of view because they are newcomers to the business.
Yeah.
But I call them newbies. I have newbies all the way up to CEOs and directors, Emmy-winning editors. I have heads
Emmy
of companies.
Emmy-winning writers.
Emmy-winning writers. I have feature film writers. I have executives from television studios and TV networks. I have people representing new media and digital media, which I guess is the same thing. Pretty much all walks of life.
Yeah, it's great.
All walks of Hollywood life, which is a walk that has lots of cracks in it.
The most common theme I get out of this book, 103 Ways, is internships are crucial.
Number one.
It is very crucial.
Number one.
How do you take these internships, though, and turn it into something more than an internship? Because they take very few interns and get jobs out of it. Now, there's other ways. There's the non-obvious ways where you make connections and you network, and that's how you get jobs. They may not even necessarily be at the place you're interning.
Correct.
Being out here is really important and working out here.
Correct. I mean, there are obvious and non-obvious ways. And, in fact, some of them do turn into full-time jobs when you're done. For instance, the Television Academy out here has an internship program, and what they do when the internship is over is they work to parlay that into a full-time job.
That's great.
They can't guarantee it, but part of the internship is working with the TV Academy when it's over to get a full-time job.
So from people that read your book, would they have a good understanding in your mind of how to get these competitive internships?
Absolutely. First, they need to know they're out there, and they need to look for them, and they are out there. Some are described in terms of websites, and some are just described in terms of somebody's story, but absolutely they'll figure it out. And it's really not rocket science if you think about, well, I want to work at NBC or I want to work at such and such production company or I want this kind of job, to just follow the electronic trail, Google it, and look to see if there's an internship program along with that company.
So I actually do think, and this isn't just because we're good friends and that we work together now, but 103 ways to get into the TV, which you can click on the link on our website. Go to our website, click on Jim McCarron's show for today. It's in there. Click on the link. You go to Amazon.
$15.
This is one of the most important books, I think, to get in the business.
Well, thank you for saying
that.
Because
no one was writing these kind of books.
Well, that's why I did it. And I don't mind saying I consider it successful, and I don't mind saying that because all I did was put it together. I stapled it. I put all the ideas in a pile, and I stapled it into a book, self-published it. But the ideas come from you. You're one of the contributors.
Yeah.
The ideas come from people who have walked the walk and talked the talk, from boots-on-the-ground survivors of people in Los Angeles. So it's your story. So I don't mind giving you guys the kudos for stepping up and helping me put it together. I will say, the best review or introduction to the book that I can communicate here is from a reader who was also a former student. I met up with him when I was in Chicago last fall teaching for the fall quarter, and he was a student prior to that quarter. I met him for coffee at whatever neighborhood I lived in, and I walk in, and he's got the book, and we've talked about it. It's a big book. It's an 8.5 by 11 source book kind of workbook. He has it all marked up. He has Post-its all over it. He has it highlighted.
It's big enough you can highlight.
Because, I mean, parenthetically, the book is essentially 102 emails.
It's a guide. It's a guide, too.
And it's a reproduction of actual emails from colleagues and these people I'm describing, these newbies. It's exactly word for word what they emailed me about how they broke into the business.
Right.
And all the personal information redacted. So you can't identify them. Not that anyone said anything scandalous or gossip, and I think they would even be willing. Most were willing to use the name.
I was going
to
say, I'm sure there's a lot of people, because like myself, I go, do whatever you want, but I don't care.
yeah, it became a point that I didn't want there to be an index in it because I was self-publishing it, and it made it a little more complicated. And then people will be going through looking name by name and then looking for identification rather than information.
Yeah.
So I walk into the coffee shop with this kid, and he has it all marked up. His name's Miguel. He's a really nice guy. And he says, the bottom line with this book is, and this is what I'm using to promote it with, he said, I want to break into television. I want to break into film. I want to move to Hollywood. When am I ever going to get 103 separate people in the same room at the same time for advice?
Right. That's smart. That's really smart, actually.
And
that's the best way to sell it. You're right.
That's what it sums up.
Wow. Yeah.
I wanted to break in when I first came here, 134 years ago, and I didn't know how, and I didn't know whom to socialize with, and I wouldn't know who any of these 103 people are, whatever the version was back in the early 90s. This, I think, gives them that information.
Yeah, yeah. Lee and I could have used this.
Yeah,
I could have used it.
Right?
I mean, I literally didn't know how it worked, and it took several years to figure out.
It does, and that's what you spend if you come out. You spend the first several years figuring out how to figure it out.
Yeah.
So it's saving a lot of time. And those are important things to learn. I mean, that's not a waste of your time. But
it's also not just about – I mean, I think it applies to other jobs as well, and I've talked to people who are not TV people, who are friends of mine who bought it because it does seem to apply for any newcomer to the business field or anybody who just graduated from college. You know, how to break into the world that isn't the world you know.
Right.
But part and parcel of this book is not just how to break into TV, although you will close the book knowing how to do that, but it's how to negotiate Los Angeles. Because
right.
a lot of people, don't forget, this book, the inspiration, the genesis was my college class I was teaching in Chicago. And as does most everybody associated with your show, and as you've been talking about here, coming out to this high school that is Los Angeles is very confusing.
It is. Yes. It is. And I even still have questions for you about that we're going to get to. But
as you show up on that first day of high school, literally, we can take the metaphor to that point, which is you don't know where anything is on the first day of high school. You don't know where the fictional fourth floor pool is. It doesn't exist.
Right.
No. You don't know where the cafeteria is. You don't know where anything is. So the book is not just about how to get an internship, how to understand that assistants are the source of power in Hollywood, how to create friends, how to create connections, whom to schmooze and why. But it's literally when not to move out here, the months where nothing is happening.
Right.
It's whether to turn north or south when you land at
the
airport.
We've talked about that. We'll joke about that every now and then. We were talking about, Lee, I'm sure it was an episode or maybe you and I just talked about this privately, but we talk about how through like November to like March, there's all it is award season.
Yeah.
And if you want to film a project or do something out here, it's literally near impossible.
Yeah, but we did it because we're idiots.
Well, we got lucky.
We got lucky,
We got very lucky.
We had a lot of people helping us. But
scheduling
it is
five people of those caliber to be in the same place at the same time on the same day for something not awards related was a miracle in itself. And that's why Pat Tobias really hit it out of the park booking people. Because that's a miracle to get five people of that caliber in the same room for a pilot in January.
Everything just shuts down.
The day before the Screen Actor Guild Awards, by the way.
It supposedly was like December to February.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of more like November to March.
Yeah, that's what I'm feeling.
It keeps widening.
It does. It does. Any excuse to take a day off out here. My favorite was I was on Facebook last week.
Not going into the office. It's Arbor Day.
No. That's the best part. Last week, I know numerous people I knew numerous people took off for Valentine's Day. Numerous people in the business took off.
Well, I'm a Christian, and he was a saint, so.
So, Jim makes a good point about when you read this book, you'll also know the best times to come out here, and that's something I talk to people about because I know a lot of people that now come to me for advice, like I'm one to get advice from, but, they come to me out here to ask for advice about when to come out, how much money you need, do you need a car, all these things, and all these things are answered in this book, 103 Ways to Get into TV, by 102 who did, plus me, and that's Jim McCarron. It's on our website. Go to our website, click on Jim McCarron's. You can click on the link and order the book, $15 for the hard copy, $3 for the ebook version.
I will say now that we've brought, if I can, that the answer is I'm out here and expect to get meetings in the television world between the end of March and the first week of June.
So really, July to October, people, is when you need to be out here.
Right. Those are pretty good months.
And that's for TV. For movies, I know summer's dead. So it's, you know, it's just really fucking confusing.
Yeah. Don't worry, you'll have plenty of time to wait tables or whatever you're going to wind up doing for money.
You could come by Taste Chicago in Burbank and hang out and write your scripts.
Yeah.
Whatever people do.
We do talk about how much money to bring as well.
Yeah.
A lot.
We talk, the average seems to be $5,000.
And okay. I encourage 10. When I talk to people, I say if you're smart, because it could be a while before you get a gig.
Well, you should bring as much as you can.
Yeah.
It'd be foolish to bring any less than about 5K, even though that there's a you know, exception to everything, and people can strike oil, you know, coming out here broke. But, you know, this first and last month rent, there's car insurance, there's transferring your title and your car.
There's all the...
Lee, why don't you, because I'm tired of telling this story, why don't you tell people what it took to get the apartment we got last time and this time out here to get an apartment in LA right now?
Well,
and
this is
at like every apartment complex, by the way. This isn't just Lee and I stumbled upon the two that are bad.
They wanted, it was basically, they wanted the bank statements. They wanted proof of employment, complete with letter. You know, you have to be able to show pay stubs. Obviously, there was also...
They want you to have a job already.
Yeah,
and you
tax returns.
You and whoever you're living with or by yourself, you have to be pulling in $50,000 a year.
Yeah.
And it helps to have established a credit history, and a lot of people in college don't know that's important.
Don't know that and don't have one. They just got out of college, so chances are they're in a lot of debt.
But there's a way around it, and it doesn't mean going into huge debt.
Find people to sublet from if you can. Find roommates if you can.
But get a credit card.
Even if it's one you never use. Spend $20 a month on it.
Right.
Pay it off.
Pay it.
Yeah, right.
Because
exactly.
You establish a credit history that way.
And Pat Tobias had a great point because he produces this show with Caesar and books the show. And Pat really wanted everyone to know, everyone in Hollywood takes Monday and Friday off, never checks their email on the weekends. And if there is a holiday on a Monday, they take Tuesday off, too.
Right.
And they leave early on Friday before.
Right, they do.
Right. But that's my favorite.
Not even like early, like as in 3 p.m. I'm talking like 1:30.
People sometimes ask me, Matt, why don't you promote who's coming on the show like a week ahead of time? Because outside of the big places like Leno and Letterman, here's what happens. We know who's coming on today. Like, I know who's coming on next week. But it won't be, it's 99% today. And
right.
I don't want to risk that even 1% that you're going to tune in next week and the guest didn't show up. It makes the guests look bad.
Makes the guests look bad.
I don't want the guests to look bad.
Makes us look silly. Or sometimes, you know, people flake.
And
I
we're
mean,
not going to hear Friday.
For whatever
we're
reason.
We're not going to hear Monday. And Tuesday's the day it'll get confirmed. That's why I usually always find out the day before who we have.
That's true. And you never know,
you know.
You never know when someone's going to flake, and it's very unfortunate, but it does happen, Maggie Grace. But we we try not to let it get to us.
Tom Sizemore.
Yeah, right.
I want to throw a quick shout-out to Pat saying it was not a big deal about the snafu regarding whether I was coming in or not. So it's honest to God, it was a joke. I made fun of it. No reason to feel bad about it. It was funny. Things happen.
I thought I brought enough money when I moved out here, but
I both thought.
I had car problems.
Yep.
I got tickets from the police for things that I didn't know that were laws.
Did I tell
that you would not get busted for in Chicago?
Did I tell people
so
about
I had
my
a
ticket?
Few drinks. What?
Did I tell people on the show about my ticket?
What happened?
How bad it was? Well, remember, your ticket was at least cheap, but you had to go to school for
it. Wasn't
it.
Cheap. It was $500.
Oh, it was?
It was a lot. Plus school.
Okay, but they had the school fee on them.
Yeah.
And it was vet school.
I'm going to tell you guys something that just happened to me, and this will really hurt your checkbook. My insurance, a half a year's insurance out here for a man my age with no record is $1,300, $1,300 for 6 months. In Chicago, it's less. Okay, that's first of all. So be prepared because you can't drive without insurance out here.
No.
So you're basically paying $200 a month just to drive your shitty car
right.
that you have to fill up with gas that costs $50 for the tank.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you'll be driving a lot because you can't get anywhere unless you. Yeah.
Two, we're working on this pilot, and I got a meeting with Joe Carnahan, and Joe. he has a lot of energy, so he's all over the place. So you never know when you're going to catch him at the right time, and you never know when you're going to have to... Because I needed a good, like, half hour with Joe to talk. I couldn't just catch him in five-minute spurts. So I go, we have one time to do this. One. This is it. We're flying to this meeting. I go through, which, by the way, in Beverly Hills, and Lee, you can attest I'm not BSing, the shortest yellow lights on the planet.
Right.
And it's on purpose.
Right.
They have cameras in Beverly Hills. $580 ticket comes my way. They don't let me go to school for it, which is an extra $100, and it's an eight-hour day in a class.
Yeah.
And my insurance is now $1,700 a half a year. I am paying $250 every month to drive to get shit on by everyone in this business.
Right.
I am paying for it. I am paying for
you
it.
Mighty.
All that being said... Everybody outside of Los Angeles also needs to know, which was the point of the book, not to be afraid to come here.
Oh, right. That's what I meant. But don't be afraid.
Look, it's an effed up world out here in the same way it is if you go and try and drive around Boston. Washington actually has worse traffic than Los Angeles. There's lots of cities that certainly are not – that are new to you if you're there for the first time.
Right.
And L.A. is strange on top of that, you know, a thousandfold.
Yeah.
But when students come up and say, can I move out there because I don't think I can handle it, you want to point out to them that you really can. I mean, if there's craziness, that's fine, but you
can handle it.
If
someone came up to me and said, I don't know if I can handle it, I'd assume they probably can't and tell them not to do
it. I'd say, hey, know your limitations. But
if you don't have the confidence that you can handle it, and by the way, they only know half of what goes on out here, maybe even less than that, then odds are you need to prepare a little better.
But I'm such a dour, bitter, I'm just like, the whole thing, I feel like this whole area, this town is just sort of set up to keep you out. You get a feeling like you're not wanted.
You and I have this conversation all the time.
Then
it's like
another
a country
part of me
club
says,
inside a country club inside a country club.
But you know what? It just says, just keep your head up and you will be okay.
That's
just spend the time and don't.
I can't agree more. And look, if I was the guy coming to you 20 years ago and you were saying don't do it, then we wouldn't have had the past 20 years of me being here.
That's true.
I wouldn't have written the book. I wouldn't be sitting here with you guys.
So people,
you guys wouldn't be here.
Avoid me.
Right.
Please avoid me. I'm just distracted because this nice family is eating the best looking pasta I've seen in town. Here at Taste Chicago, and it smells good. I smell garlic bread.
Yeah,
and
it really smells
I'm very
wonderful.
Distracted. It looks fantastic. But back to the conversation at hand here.
Food, always food.
I'm always distracted, but that's why the pilot is a good portion food.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the edit we're working on. I'm definitely took your notes. By the way, and other people's notes as well, very similar to yours.
Well, I think when you have a show called Dine and Dash and the topic is episiotomy, you know that reference probably should come out of the pilot.
You know, I was very grateful to have people like you involved, and then people who aren't even connected to the show at all give me very copious notes, like Michael Whitehorn. And just great people I've made friends with in this business. And by the way, I do not have the answers for you on how you know if you're really friends with someone in this business or not. I can tell you the people I am legitimately friends with, it just happens. You just figure it out. It's a feeling out process. Because that's an annoying aspect about out here, too, because you talk about 103. You have a lot of friends in this business. How do you consider – what's the difference for you between a friend – and a business acquaintance?
I don't – well, now they're all leaning forward, closer to the computers to listen to the answer. I think you know it the way you know it when you're in school.
Yeah, right. I kind of feel that too, which is the high school aspect again.
And with any job, you just know that there are people who are good people to talk to have acquaintanceships with, and then there are people you're going to socialize with and form a friendship with.
Yeah.
I'll say to you, how do you know when they're your friends or when they're not? Look down the line after your pilot, Dine and Dash, gets picked up and then ultimately gets canceled.
Right. And see who's my friend then.
Then see who's your friend then. The ones who no longer return your calls once the show goes off the air will be...
That's a tough pill to swallow.
That... That is a horse pill to swallow.
Yeah, yeah. I imagine that's absolutely accurate.
It's a town of leverage, and like the jocks versus the nerds, if you want to go to that extreme, and the metaphor works, the jocks have the leverage, and if you don't have leverage, you will never get a return phone call. Or they'll say to themselves, however nicely, even if they're your friends, to a degree, they'll say to themselves, what's really in it for me to make this return call?
Sure, sure.
That's when you tend to know. But I think that really can apply to any stage of life, to anybody.
It doesn't necessarily mean they're bad people. Uh-huh. But the thing I don't like about out here is there's not a lot, and this is why we do this show the way we do it, there's not a lot of transparency.
No.
There's no one walking up to you. See, I have literally said to people, I will walk up. Peter Tolan, Michael Whitehorn, Sam Simon, I've said to all three of them privately, I've said to them, I don't care about ever working with you. If we do, we do. If we don't, we don't. That's probably going to be on you, not me. I'm your friend. That's all I care about. I care about hanging out, drinking coffee, talking shit, whatever. That's what I care about, being friends.
And were they on the phone
most
when
people
you said this
don't,
to them?
No, they're not. But most people don't care about that. Most people don't say that to you. They will never say that to you. And that's something I've learned. So I've been very transparent with people, and they can take advantage of you for being transparent. So you better be careful about who you're transparent to. I think that's why this business isn't so transparent, is no one wants to show their cards.
No.
But I'm a poker player.
And it's made.
And I know to when you play poker, you hold on to the really good cards. You let no one know about them. But you show some of your cards. You do. You want to play people to that degree where here's some of my cards. Here's who I am to a degree. Now, I'm not going to show you my full deck because if you fuck with me, I'm gonna get you. But yeah,
like you got Lucy Solis, you mean?
No, Lucy I love. But
no kidding. I didn't even hear what it is you said about her the other day. But according to what I'm hearing today, it was pretty good.
We just explained the pilot, which you were. And
she was lovely.
She was lovely.
She was my favorite member of that panel.
She was a good time.
Yes.
Not in a way that someone says in a burlesque show either. She's not that kind of good time.
She was a good time, all right?
She was a good time. Hey.
No, she was actually quite blunt. She was sweet. She was direct.
But you like that.
And
she was funny.
All in an affectionate, sort of involving, charming way.
Yeah.
I mean, the other members of the panel were all nice people.
Yeah.
I feel as if I know them or know of their persona from their work. Lucy, I was not as familiar with. Except, of course, for Xena, which is 100 years ago. And suddenly there's this lovely woman sitting there talking about all these wonderful issues. And
both women really surprised me. Like, and I don't mean that in like a demeaning way, but I mean, I just found Kate Walsh and Lucy to be the most intelligent people there. And I'm not slighting the other three men, but Lucy and Kate Walsh both had very intelligent things to say. And what Kate did that was great was she was asking intelligent questions, too. She didn't have all the answers. She wasn't the be-all, end-all. She didn't have all the answers. She was giving an opinion, but asking, is that even a good opinion, or is this a good question?
Well, she was making jokes, and she was bringing up subjects that were not pertaining to the business, which is we needed that kind of some footage of that kind of thing, too.
And she was bawdy, and she was funny, and she was lovely, and And what I find after so many years here, after 20-some years here, is I tend to gravitate towards or keep an eye cocked towards conversations that aren't necessarily about the business.
Yes. Yeah.
And I sort of determine, am I going to have a good time with these people based on what I'm hearing? And
they tell you a lot more about the person.
Exactly. And she was one of those who was able to sort of venture off topic into life and not just showbiz.
I'm not going to say who because I do like the person, but someone who's not affiliated with the pilot.
Jesus?
Yes. Jesus said to me, you don't want to have on Kate Walsh. She's not going to be good. And I had a gut feeling that Kate was going to be really good, and I'm glad we stuck with Kate because she was great. And we went after Kate from day one.
We did,
day one. She was like one of the first people we hit up.
Mm-hmm.
So I really wanted Kate. I really felt like I knew her series was ending. I thought this would be a great move for her. It'd be a great move for us. And I wanted to know more about Kate's personality because Kate did a Chelsea Handler. She's done interviews here and there, and I thought she's been good. And I just felt like there was something to Kate we haven't seen, and I think this show does bring that out. I think you see sides of Kate Walsh that you may not have expected to see. And same with Lucy, like you brought up. You didn't know much about Lucy's work, and then you see Lucy, and you're like, wow, okay, that's who Lucy is.
Right.
And that's what we were trying to do with this show. What I also loved was Dermot Mulroney's personality really comes out, because Dermot the chameleon. Right. As an actor, he does. He'll be the leading man, and his movie will make $300 million. Or he'll do About Schmidt, wear a mullet and a mustache, and have a weird accent, and he'll be great. So Dermot's a chameleon as an actor. So you really don't get a sense of who Dermot is. And Dermot comes on this pilot, and he's funny, and he's sharp, and he's got one-liners left. He was just zingers.
Very dry.
Left and right. Very yeah. dry, funny. Dry, funny humor. And so, yeah, I think you really get a good sense of who these people are. That's part of the goal when you're editing. I took your notes, and another thing we're doing, and we're wrapping up a new cut tonight, but we definitely added the food aspect back in big time. I don't know why. We were kind of just testing the content and the footage with the first cut.
Right.
And I wanted this to be not Dinner for Five, which I've said from day one. I don't want this to be that show. I wanted it to be like, I've always said Tony Scott films a talk show. And I think I finally came up with the best comparison. It is a little Dinner for Five, but it meets Tony Bourdain. It meets Anthony Bourdain's
show. Don't
call
him Tony. You don't know him.
I think he loves Tony.
Okay.
Well, Tony right. Bors?
Tony Bors? Yeah.
Tony Bors?
Okay.
Yeah.
Your good friend.
Right. My good friend is Tony Bors.
Never met him.
No, never met him. I wish. We've tried him on this show
I
like
know.
A billion
we
times.
We like him a lot.
So I kind of wanted this to be Bourdain show meets Dinner for Five. So I wanted to have that food aspect back. I wanted Scott Cannon to be featured in this thing. Scott Cannon had some good stories. He talked some major trash about Gordon Ramsay. It needs to be on the show. It's good. It's entertaining. And the other thing is I talked to Bruce Fretz today, and I've talked to, you know, like Whitehorn and some other people, and they make a very good note. They go
a lot of names, doesn't he?
They go, yep. Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, I like to give him credit. Like I like to give him credit. I don't drop the names when I don't want to give them. But I'm saying the reason I dropped the name is this is not just my idea. This is very smart on their part because I agree with them. Bruce says you need to have the humor. You need to have the humor aspect. And it's right. If it's all about the business, no one's going to watch except in New York and L.A., and then you got 30 Rock. That's my feelings on the pilot. It
you
really
don't
needs,
want 30 Rock.
No, you don't. You don't. You need to have a balance of the food, business, and humor. All at you need. You know, you need to have a good balance.
Yeah, I was
all.
Telling Mike and Bruce and Bobby and Vinny and my buddies over
people.
At them the
you
other
you got
day.
No friends.
Yeah, I'm dropping my name.
You
Sarah
got no
and
friends.
Happy and grumpy and sneezy.
He's
and,
just jealous he didn't hang out with Harvey Weinstein last night.
By the way, okay. Is the Italian festival
neither
free?
Neither did you.
It's free. The Italian festival is free. Pascal Vicadamini.
So it's free and gratis?
It is.
Huh?
It is. It's
I wasn't
great.
Sure.
It's great. But, yeah, so, I mean, you know, what were your thoughts on filming this pilot since you've been in the business so long and everything and you get a good sense of you're an experienced guy. You got the.
Well, I do feel ancient because I wasn't all that familiar with the whole notion of the video village with all the feeds set up. In
oh,
that,
sure.
That's sort of new
it's
to me.
Pretty new to me, too. When I started doing filmmaking in college, it wasn't like that, and then it got to be like that.
Well, certainly if I go to a taping a sitcom taping, there's a feed of, you know, three or four cameras.
Yeah.
But this is six digital cameras, and you're watching all of them at the same time. From a technological point of view, I was pretty astonished, and in a good way, impressed. And I think everybody did a really good job. There's a lot of commotion.
Yeah.
Six cameras moving around. And I think there might have been, was it? No, the
we
six could was have the
used
master.
An assistant director. I think that was like, I think our low point, the thing we could have improved on, the things we could improve on, and if I ever give anyone advice on doing a show like this where you have six cameras and a bunch of people talking, is you do need someone to run the show somehow.
I would say that as well.
And me as a talent, I can't do it. Because
yeah,
I can't be the bad guy.
I think that came to that sort of came to mind when I thought there might have been an issue I wanted to bring to your attention, and we
yeah.
wanted to cut tape. And I said, "Well, where's the director or the producer?" And they said, "Everybody with a camera."
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I was like, "Well, we can't talk to them because they're kind of busy."
You asked me, and I'm like,
"So we could have used an assistant director who could have controlled everyone in the back because and everyone was great. The crew was great. Everyone
right,
in the back
but
was great.
You have to run interference,
but you do need to. You need someone to say." even though this is an unscripted show, you need someone to say, what you just said was really great. We didn't get a good feed of it. Can we do it again?
Did you just burp?
Yes, I did.
Into the mic?
Yeah. I did.
That's usually something I do for a cheap laugh.
At what?
Yeah.
I think you also need somebody on comm or whatever it's called. I know it only from 24 that it's called on comm, but somebody with an earpiece so that people can talk to the host.
We
while
decided
he's...
against that, and that was a mistake.
I think...
That was a mistake.
If only to say, Matt, lean left instead of right, or Matt, can you direct this question to Kate Walsh instead of to Lucy? There's advantages to it.
Sure. Sure, but I mean, overall, we have a lot of great content. It is just a pilot. Obviously, a network may or may not know how to make it better, and they're going to give you more money to do it. And then hopefully, the potential is going to be seen, because I think this show has not been done like this. I think the way we're going to do it, and you'll see in the second cut, I don't think there's been a show done like this. And I think it's a great get for either the Travel Channel, the Food Network, or even a cable network like FX, or maybe even a Showtime or a Cinemax.
Or IFC.
Well, the problem with IFC is, as we talked, when did we talk about this, IFC?
Or
my favorite Dan Pasternak quote ever, which I know I've told Jim, but I don't think I've ever told on this show, is I asked Dan about this show before we do it.
Dan is the head of IFC.
And Dan,
very good guy.
Dan said he loved the idea enough, and you know, and I go, well, I think it would be perfect for the independent film channel. And he goes, oh, no, we're just IFC.
Right.
And I go, what does IFC stand for then, Dan? He goes, doesn't stand for anything. We're just IFC. So I don't know what they're doing over there anymore. I don't know if
they do
their game plan.
Like KFC can't call it Kentucky Fried Chicken.
But my manager friend Sherry thinks it's great at IFC too, so you may be on to something there. Yeah.
I think they don't peg themselves to what IFC stands for anymore, in much the same way that Sci-Fi and other cable networks sort of...
SYFY now.
Yeah, I mean, they do tend to step outside the label that is created for good or bad.
Too, because now they're doing stuff like this.
They're doing they're doing a lot more original. I don't know how they are in terms of a talk show. But
I think they're trying to do stuff.
I think IFC should look at it and others as well. I don't say that just as an investor and as a producer, but I think it's a very unusually rich looking talk show format. Done really well.
And that's why I did want the cinematic aspect of it. I did want to have, and rich is the best word. I really wanted it to look like, and once it's in color correction, it's going to it's going to look better. So, I mean, I did want it to look like a Ridley or Tony Scott film. I did. That's what I wanted. I wanted it to be Ridley Scott films, a dinner table conversation.
You should have had everyone
backlit
then.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
Well, we didn't want to totally rip them all off.
No.
But yeah.
It's a little more Ridley than Tony, but...
Right. And you know, Discovery Channel's doing stuff like this. Now, TLC, you never know where you could... You got a bunch of options.
They would have to be Amish people eating dinner
for
TLC.
Right.
Or Amish midgets.
But by the way, if you take out... And this was my argument. If you take out the food aspect, then you lose the TLCs and the Travel Channel and the Food Channel, because they're not going to understand it then. They're not going to understand where it is with their audience. So if you balance everything, too, if you have humor, business, and food, it opens the door up to you to do to show it to a lot more people who could have interest in it. And food's really hot right now, too. I hate saying it like this. I hate talking like this.
Food is in.
Yes. As food shows are not only getting picked up left and right, but the ratings are doing well, and the overhead's cheap.
Since the Mesolithic area, or whatever, the palace, you know, since the cave days.
Yeah.
Food is in.
Food is in.
Yeah.
Food is in, but I mean, Bourdain has that new show on ABC that's doing well. The Chew is actually doing well, which I never expected. But yeah, I mean, these shows are actually, because the overhead's low, though, too. The overhead's low, so they can do it cheap and get some good advertising out of it. I mean, I understand what's going on.
You'll complete the pilot. We'll see where it goes from there.
And the good news is I'm also cheap. Overhead's low on this show.
Right, right.
And financially, too.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Overhead's completely low on this show. Financially, we're cheap, so it's good. We are the perfect place for a network that wants to take advantage of us.
Right. We are a cheap date.
We have tons of A-list and B-list connections for you. We'll bring them all on the show.
Yeah.
I mean, if I told you who
you
agreed to do
us.
A second episode, this is why we need to get picked up. If I told you, if you want me to drop names, if I told you who's agreed to be on the second episode, it'll blow your mind.
Yeah.
You'll think it's the biggest episode ever. So, I mean, let's just hope we get picked up now.
Joanne Worley?
It's Joanne Worley, yes. And with Kilmer at the end of her name. She threw Kilmer back in there. Or is it Joanne Whaley that's Kilmer?
Wally Kilmer.
You're
confusing,
right.
Val Kilmer's ex-wife with the star of Laugh In.
Joanne Woodward.
Oh, my favorite moment was...
Do you have a segue coming out of Joanne Woodward?
No, but I was just thinking back to the pilot. And you... I'm not going to give anyone credit for this, but it was also one of my favorite moments. And I hate to call Carnahan out on this, because I love Joe, and Joe knows I love him. But, bro... Joe Carnahan talking about Carol Burnett is the biggest load of horseshit I've ever heard in my life.
I was wondering where that came from exactly.
What? If Joe really knows all about Carol Burnett, then him and I need to have an all different conversation that we've never had before.
Well, he said his age, so his age sort of makes sense, but I didn't understand the connection to Carol
Joe's
Burnett.
What, 42?
He said he was 42. I didn't know if it was.
Yeah, he is. I mean, I believe him on that. So, I mean, I just can't imagine what Joe would have seen of Carol's.
Right.
Perhaps their paths crossed, or they worked together.
Or one of her terrible pilots from the 80s. I don't know.
Maybe he just happened to see her say this on a talk show. But, yeah, he did quote Carol Burnett.
It was definitely interesting coming out of him, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Maybe he read the wrong line. That was someone else's line in the unscripted show.
It was Charles Burnett he meant.
Yeah. Charles Burnett, yeah.
So you got another book you're doing that's coming out soon.
I do, in a couple weeks.
What's the title of it?
The title is called The Sheep is What Makes It Funny. The subtitle being...
And this is more your memoir.
This is my memoir to the degree that... I mean, I'm not fond of that word, and I don't know who cares about my life.
Right.
But to the degree anybody cares outside of my family, yes, it is a story of how I got from... or went from Philadelphia to working at CBS and what I've done since.
If Snooki can call her book a memoir, I think you can call your book a memoir.
Or Drew Barrymore at age 10.
Yeah, right.
But, the subtitle is how I found myself in television, and it's exactly that on every level.
So what can we expect in this book other than just about your personal experience in the business?
It's not just stories.
Talks about my younger years in Philadelphia and how I fell in love with television, how television invited me into the screen and how I listened, literally, how I knew that there was something going on there that I wanted to be a part of, and how that it probably offered a life that was a little more interesting than what I was seeing back in Philadelphia in an otherwise normal row home in Philadelphia, but a big family of 9 people, and this offered a different kind of world out there. And I ended up delaying the dream of wanting to work there and had a more conventional life in my 20s. And then after some personal issues, including the death of my mother, I said, I got to find out if there's life out there. I've got to know where this trail goes. I can't die knowing I never tried. And so I sold my house, dropped everything I knew, packed up the car, and showed up in Los Angeles knowing essentially nobody and just started from scratch trying to figure out how I want to work in TV or what that looks like.
The way you got your job at CBS is like my favorite story ever, and I'm sure that's in the book.
It's in the book.
And it's a great story.
I don't mention names purposely because I've worked with a lot of interesting people, including Leslie Moonves at CBS. He's referred to... Not because it's a Romano Clay or because there's any scandal to hide. He's just referred to as the boss. I mean, people are referred to by way of their role in my life, coworker, boss, friend.
Sure.
One of the two names I do mention is that of Norman Lear because he started it all. He made it happen.
Yeah.
In interviewing him for a magazine article, and I was scratching at the building trying to find into my way to this building called Show Business. And it was just like I've talked in class. It was like this tall building getting taller, and I knew people were in there. Lights were on.
Yeah.
But there was no door. There's no window. And I had been in town 2 years, and I was freelance. I was a freelance writer, and met him, and it was a wonderful, wonderful encounter. And he said, "Whose mail are you delivering?" And I said, "I'm trying." He said, "You need to be doing more than what you're doing, sitting here right in front of me." And I said, "I'm trying." He said, "What have you done about it?" I told him that I'd written a letter to CBS back in the days before email. And he said, "Go home and send me the letter." And I did. And he contacted CBS on my behalf. I was in there for an interview a month later. And I was hired, and I stayed 13 years.
That's a good reference.
That's good.
Norman Lear. He's a decent reference.
I'm in touch with him to say, that's to thank great. Him. Uh, every year for the first 5 years of my employment at CBS on April 12th, on the anniversary of my first day. I sent him a gift. I've been in touch with him since. He's 91. He's more healthy and more active than any of the four of us here. Yeah. He's got twin teenage girls.
That's great.
And I don't mean to mention, you know, name drop, but I saw him recently for breakfast, and it was early breakfast at 8:30. And I only say that because he showed up and he said he had already been up for hours with a business meeting, a visit to a dentist, and he made his daughter's breakfast.
That's great. It's once you start name dropping like that you're in trouble. You're right. Okay. You can.
All I have is Norman Lear.
Day. Well, that's the best one.
I mean, that's
the best one of the bunch.
Well, yours was he's very active and he has two daughters that he serves breakfast to and all that.
Right.
His is like, yeah, so we got thrown out of a building where we met so and so.
Listen, people want names. Yeah. All right, people want names. So
there are some names of the projects I worked on in the book, though, but I don't name names of colleagues and things like that.
Any great Joan of Arcadia stories since we're at Arlene Montaigne's place, Joe's wife? Any great Joan of Arcadia bits?
I have no Joan of Arcadia references. I was at the I was at the network when it was on.
Yeah. And Criminal Minds started when you were there, but it was not. It was the Mandy Patinkin version.
2005,
right?
Correct.
Right.
He was on for the first year.
Sure. That's before Joe came in. Saved the day.
And right, he made the show a little more calibrated.
Yes, and Joe...
Behind the scenes, from what I hear.
I kind of feel like Joe saved it, too, in a way, because it's like, I don't know if they would have tried a show with just Thomas Gibson. I mean, they obviously got a name to replace Mandy because they felt like they needed a name. They could have replaced him with anybody if they didn't think Mandy was the... Because Mandy was the guy on that show at the beginning.
I think those types of shows, the development person would tell you they need you need a way into the show. You need the eyes into the show. And it was Mandy and or now Joe. It's not Thomas Gibson.
It's so weird. I hear Mandy's a great guy. I've heard that from a lot of people. And I just heard his problem with that show was it turned into something he really didn't think it was going to be.
Well,
you hear that a lot, though, right? Stuff like that with any actor.
He's a bit of a he's an eccentric. He's got
ever since Yentl.
He's got some, you know. I've never met him. I don't know him. I've never worked with him. I only know what I read, which is that he's got this Broadway temperament that makes him a little mercurial, a little out there sometimes.
Yeah.
But he did leave both CBS shows, Chicago Hope,
right,
and Criminal Minds inside of a year. And again, I only know what I read. But he did say last year, which was a good 4 or 5 years after leaving, that the reason he left after that first year was because the show did turn into more of an exercise in misogyny than he had envisioned.
Well, you've had that conversation in numerous outlets.
Numerous
times.
Right, we've discussed this when you were here
and
before.
You've had on our show, you've had on other shows recently because you've been doing the press tour.
I talked about it with the LA Times. I've talked about it with Mike.
And this is
Mike
something you and I agree on, too,
we agree. And also now, especially in light of more of a national discussion that we're having about violence in media and all that kinds of things.
Well, which is when I finally weighed in. A friend of mine who runs a small chain of newspapers in the Midwest said, you know, I know you talk about this issue. Do you want to write something for us? And I was happy to do it. I think it's going to appear in maybe 10 weeklies in the Midwest, maybe Milwaukee, Chicago area. I don't care. It's online as well, so I guess that will up its profile. But I wanted to get it out there because since Sandy Hook and these discussions everybody is having, we're having discussions about what happens after things come out of the pipeline.
Right.
Right.
And there may or may not be an answer. In fact, I don't think there is. I'm being generous when I say there may or may not be. I don't think there's ever going to be one clear answer about what to do about the connection between violence, guns, Hollywood, if there is one. And I think there is. But instead of just taking corners, which is really what has been the position since Sandy Hook happened in December, where, you know, it's, you know, tastes great, less filling. You know, everybody just assumes this position. There's no real way to sort of get anybody off of their side. My position had always been, let's look at what we're doing as we're making it.
Right.
Yeah, right.
If there is an impression
fix
of television.
Fix what we can fix.
Fix what we can fix. Let's not talk about it after it airs and saying, well, we want to be brought a solution. If we do, let's take a look when we read a script, when we see rough cuts, before a show goes on the air that has our name on it.
We don't have to censor ourselves. Let's just put thought and humanity into the process.
Let's realize, and again, what got me started about this 10 years ago, and a lot of my colleagues are tired of hearing it, but I'm not tired of saying it, is One of our shows featured a serial killer, and one of his victims was, I'll be careful how I say this even in a public place, but one of the victims was a 13-year-old girl. And I took notice of that, if not offense to it, and I said, you know, this doesn't need to be a musical. We don't need to turn this into, you know, a happy show.
Right.
But does one of the victims have to be a 13-year-old girl who cries for her father before she's beheaded? And I couldn't get any...
CBS, welcome home. Yeah.
I couldn't get anybody to listen to my concern. The answer was, I don't understand why you have a concern over this. So all I will say is, you know, the show is what the show is. I love Crime and Grime. I love serial killings. Silence of the Lambs is a great show.
Right.
I like American Psycho, although people can do themselves a favor in television, go back to watch both shows and see how much you don't see in either one of those movies,
how much
is implied.
Yeah,
right.
But,
well, even Tarantino's work. If you watch Pulp Fiction, if you watch Jackie Brown... and then you watch Django, and you're watching Glorious Bastards. See how much Quentin showed off-screen in Pulp Fiction and
right.
Jackie Brown? And then see how much in Glorious and Django. It's just boom, 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 boom.
Very
boom,
different.
Boom. Blood everywhere.
Which
shoot
are direct
everywhere.
Choices, which
right.
is a choice as a filmmaker. And, of course, he has more leverage to be able to do that these
sure.
days. He has Final Cut. Not that he didn't back then. Not that I know anything about that. But what I was saying in terms of this particular instance is, you know, let's still make it a show about serial killing. Let's have all kinds of people popped off in all kinds of ways. But let's just be careful how we present it, and let's opt on this end. Let's choose not to have a 13-year-old girl as a victim.
What are the shows right now that do that well, that balance the violence correctly or at least intelligently?
I think 24 did.
Yeah.
I think The Following doesn't.
Yeah.
I don't watch a lot of it.
I haven't watched The Following yet. That's a graphic.
The Following I turned off twice.
Really?
Following, I found unconscionable.
Really?
And I'll leave it at that, because one does sound like one's talking about, you know, noisy rock and roll music in the 50s and those kids.
Right.
There's
well,
kids.
That's why I'm asking you what the difference is, though. How do we get you to not sound like you're just complaining about the rock and roll music?
I don't, because I
why do you think you're not?
I'm not saying turn off the music.
Right.
I'm not saying the music is bad.
You're just saying, can we do this with a little more taste?
Can we do it with a little more discretion?
Yeah.
I think taste
right.
is always going to be an issue that's up to debate as well. Can we just do it with a little more discretion? Literally, can we not have a 13-year-old girl? Kill as many people as you want in this particular episode, this particular show that I was taking
why
issue
does
with.
Does it have to be a
13-year-old But why
girl?
A 13-year-old girl, and how difficult can it be to just remove the fact that she's 13?
Yeah.
And by the way, that will be something we do on this end, on the production end of the pipeline, so that when the discussion begins, as it does ad nauseum every 10 years, it does like clockwork.
Right.
Although it's every 5 years now.
Right.
And it's been going on since 1961. This discussion about violence on television. It started with The Untouchables.
Yeah.
You know, government got involved in 1961 as well. Government got involved in 1968. When the discussion begins, as it does. Somebody can say to themselves, rather than we want to be part of the solution or we're here to talk if you want to talk about it, they can say, you know what? We think we took a responsible action on this show, on this end of the pipeline, and we changed the script so that it didn't reflect this. So we may not have the answer to the problem, but this was our contribution to the solution.
Well, I'll make you a promise. As long as you're an executive producer on our TV show, I will not kill any 13-year-old girls.
On
the show.
On the show.
On the show.
On the show.
On the show.
On the show.
I think that's only fair.
But once you leave the project, so if you decide season 3 after we get picked up now that you're leaving, well...
Well, I'll be one of those not taking your calls anyway.
Yeah, right.
Right. Yeah, right.
I can't wait.
Matthew Aaron show unconscious.
You know what my fate for Dine and Dash is? We're going to get picked up in a couple months. It's going to get released in the fall, and after one episode, they're going to be like, you're done. And that'll be my glory. It'll be the one, like the batter in the baseball game,
right.
like it's the one hit in his career.
Right.
And it's a great hit, and then he sucks.
Then you will be in league with Aaron Spelling.
There we go.
With Andy Griffith.
Okay.
Right.
With Mark Burnett.
All right.
They got canceled quickly, huh?
All of them got canceled quickly.
I like it.
You will be in good company.
So let me ask you this, from a network executive guy. These guys get canceled right away early in their careers. How did they get back into the rooms to...
By the way, not so early
make
either.
New shows.
Andy Griffith was canceled in the mid-1970s after one episode.
Sure.
Ann Margaret had a TV show on CBS produced by the producers of Knott's Landing, canceled after one episode.
So why do they bring them back in? for more shows if they got canceled. If this business is so cold heartless and they get canceled, and you know, I think everyone's perspective on it is, oh, if my show gets canceled, I'm never going to get another show. Why did these people all get more shows?
I think you're saying about five different things there. By the way, I also don't think it's cold and heartless. I think
cold and
heartless people.
I think that's the perception of it.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Some people have deals.
Yeah.
And their deals are honored.
Development
and it
deals
doesn't end with one episode of one series. Some people are given a lifeline after a show that fails. We'll do your next one.
Yeah.
And we'll announce that's in development right away so that we can bury the press about this show getting killed after one episode. Sometimes you need 13 series before you're George Clooney on ER.
Right.
And that's how many he had.
Right.
Not all were one episode and out, but he had a lot of failed series, and he was sidekick on a lot of shows thrown in that were failing to begin with. You know, everybody knows Clooney was added to the cast of The Facts of Life.
Right.
You know, but Clooney had a lot of shows before ER. And a lot of producers have a lot of shows after their failure as well. I myself do have some issues about people who continue to fail upwards and keep getting job after job before, in front of the screen and behind, when there's no other success to point to. Those are the people I wonder how it happens.
Yeah.
How do they go from failure to failure to failure and move up, move up a rung as well in the process and more money?
Yeah, Ken Hamill and I always joke that everyone fails upwards. He goes, "You want your show not to get picked up? You'll get a hit. You'll get a $1 million deal the next day.
You'll get a deal. And
you'll make more with a flop than you do with a hit.
Right.
And you'll get a better credit on your next show.
Yeah.
I think there is a discussion to be had about how people continue to be employed in a lot of jobs. Just we'll go to Capitol Hill if you want to have that discussion. But I think some people, it takes a while before you're George Clooney in ER.
Yeah, no, I understand that. That's the best way someone could explain that. Jim gave all the scenarios.
I try. I love TV.
That's great. You do. You do love TV. Why don't you give a shit about movies?
I do love movies.
But
I just
don't want to work in them.
It's a different animal.
It is. It's a different animal. I think it's apples and furniture.
What is the big differences for you between movies and TV for kids that like, especially from this point of view, with 103 ways to get in the business? Okay,
which by the way can apply to those getting into the film business as well, because I did interview film
That's
people.
That's what I was going to ask. But what's the differences? How does a kid know whether he should be in TV or film, or should he? If he wants to be in both, he should shoot for both.
Well, I mean, again, it depends on whether they're going to be in creative or technical capacity. But TV, I would say, even though there's a lot of shows that are canceled after one episode or certainly one season, there's a bit more consistency. There's a bit more of a season. There's a bit more of a structure to the TV world, whereas the movie world is you're lucky if a studio can put out 6 movies a year. After 13 weeks or whatever the shoot is on a, 3 months on a shoot for a movie, you're looking for a job. And there's fewer movies made.
Right.
And the film business is changing, as we know.
No.
I mean,
all the big studios are making 20 movies a year to 12. Right.
You're making fewer movies. They're more franchises.
And they're all co-financed now, too. Right. The studios are co-financing with everybody.
And the independent ones. Those seem to be the choices. The independent ones or the franchise ones. But I don't want to work in a movie. I mean, I'm never going to turn any job down, but I don't want to work in a movie studio because I'm not big on reading movie scripts and knowing what to put into development and how it gets made.
You're a TV guy.
I'm a TV guy.
I
grew up loving TV. I literally found myself in television. When I use that subtitle, it's not just to be cute. I didn't find myself in television, which is one day I found myself at CBS, which is true. I mean, I literally found myself at television.
I'm very curious, though, like, okay, so the movies, all right, TV, everyone says TV is getting better than movies. This is like a popular thing going around.
Right, because Entertainment Weekly says so.
Do you really believe it?
No.
I don't either.
I
agree with you. But are we once again being people that are saying turn down the rock music?
No.
Okay, why?
There's 200 shows in any given season. There's 200 shows. Look at all the networks. It adds up to probably more than 200 shows.
Right.
If you say 10% of them, which is generous, are excellent, which they are. They're people at the top of their crafts, both before the camera and behind the camera, acting, directing, writing, from Game of Thrones to Dexter to Sons of Anarchy to The Good Wife. If you say 10%, even if you say 20%, that's 40 TV series.
right.
that are the best of the best. And I'm betting you can't name 40, by the way, in this world of TV has never been better. I bet you can't name 40.
40 great shows or 40 shows? I can name 40 shows
great shows
if we include terrible ones.
40 great shows if we say TV is the place to be, which, by the way, it kind of is. But TV is the better place to be. TV is where all the great work is being done. I will say there is great work being done on television. By the way, House of Cards.
Not I loved the, House of Cards.
Not, it's not even television, by the way.
I interview Corey Stoll on Friday.
Another name on the floor.
Yep.
But listen, it's not even
television. Hey, I'm plugging a future show here. Hey, let me drop them.
That's a whole other discussion we'll have some other time about. That's not even television, right?
We were having this
it's
talk today,
literally not
Lee
television. But if you were to pursue this to a 20% of the 200 shows, roughly,
yeah. All right.
and say there are 40 can't-miss shows that represent the height of television creativity.
Okay.
That's 160 shows that are left that are the Amish. that are about the Kardashians.
Yes.
That have people eating bull testicles.
Yeah. Hold on one thing. Bro, did you have a beef sandwich?
Yeah.
Was it good?
Great, brother.
All right. It looks good. I want to have
know,
one.
Man.
I want to have one, brother.
He seems not to be talking to me when he refers to bro and the beef sandwich.
No.
He might be Amish.
That's my lingo.
Ask him
there.
If he believes in buttons.
And by the way, I'm fine with the Amish, and I have friends who work at TLC, and I don't mean to pick on them.
You can make fun of the Amish. They're never going to find out.
Where's your rim shot? And I'm being kind of mean, but for emphasis, there's 160 shows left.
Yeah.
That are not good.
Dude, we need craft service on Dine and Dash. I plan on doing it just from any restaurant that pays me, and I don't want their food. If fucking Del Taco wants to have me have a Dine and Dash there, I'll be bringing in some buffet, though.
Yeah.
We're catering.
A little bit of the buffet.
How would you like that? You want to see me and Vince Vaughn and Jeremy Piven eating Del Taco and talking shop?
Oh, please.
That'd be a good time.
That's ridiculous. They'll never be on the show.
We'll get the six cameras out. Right, right.
Do we have Piven, a maybe. Dust brush and a pan for those names?
It's just
because the floor is getting really littered. I think Vince Vaughn takes up a lot more space.
Yeah, that's true.
He does.
He sure does take up a lot of space.
How's his pilot for the reboot of the Brady Bunch coming along?
I haven't heard a thing about it since you and I said that's a terrible idea.
I'd rather watch Brady's thing.
See, I like dropping Jim's name when we're ripping on a show.
Right,
like when
right.
Jim and I are ripping on ideas and now they'll never work with us, I like bringing Jim's name into the muck.
Right.
Sweep those names up.
I don't know that you'll get Jim quoted on saying necessarily bad things about bad people.
Not the Brady Bunch show?
I will say I want to see that and find out what it is. I don't think it's the future of television.
Why do you want to see that? Because of how bad it's going to be.
I'm thinking to myself, what is it about the state of television today that makes somebody like Vince Vaughn say, you know what? I want to remake the Brady Bunch.
Yeah.
I just want to be part of that meeting.
Again.
Again.
Yeah. I don't think he was at the meeting, honestly. I don't think so. I bet it was his agent. And I bet it was whoever's writing the show. He didn't write it, though. Someone sold it, but he just put his name on it. I guarantee it.
Well, then we have a problem when it comes to television.
Well, that's
don't
what's
we?
Going yes. on right now, though. And I was talking to someone who I won't name, so you can put your duster away.
It was probably Gandhi.
It was the. I was talking to someone the
He's
other
talking
day.
Talking to George Bernard Shaw.
Who was talking about how he's having problems getting a show on the air. And this is someone who's had successful shows.
Writer or producer?
Both.
Okay.
Writer first.
Got it.
As always. who basically says, unless Chris Rock's the executive producer, or Adam Sandler, or someone, an A-list director,
yes.
or a B-list director,
yes.
but unless it's someone with a name with hits under their belt in the movie world, they can't get a show made. And all they have to do is EP it. They
Correct.
Can't get a show made. It's
Correct.
Ridiculous.
Well, because it makes it, I spent 18 months, two years in development recently, and not so much. But I will say that's how you get meetings, and that's how you get pickups, and that creates a headline, which makes the pickup worthwhile.
Well, I can promise you how it went with the Vince Vaughn Brady Bunch thing. It's Vince Vaughn's buddy. It's maybe someone at CAA who has an agent who knows Vince Vaughn's agent. They get together. They put them together as a team, or they're already buddies, and they go, Vince, will you put your name on this? You'll get paid X amount of dollars. You don't have to do a fucking thing. And that's probably how it went.
I sound way too high and mighty sometimes, often, and I take it way too seriously, and I sound way too noble about what I think television's mission should be, and I write about that in the second book called Sheep is What Makes It Funny, due soon on Amazon.com. But I do want to be in a room where somebody says, you know what? What we really – looking at the state of television, good, bad, and otherwise,
right.
Look across the board at the 600 networks, at the shows that are working, at the numbers for a show like Sons of Anarchy.
Right.
Or for The Killing.
Yeah.
And the lack of numbers for certain shows. And says to themselves, you know what? I think what the television landscape is missing right now is Vince Vaughn associated with a remake of The Brady Bunch.
I know. That's pretty good.
I want to be in that room so that I can sort of say – so that I could perhaps, insert a different thought.
Yeah. And I want to
you
say,
hear that, studios and networks?
Yeah, right. I do want to say – now that I've talked about how EPs do nothing, our EP, though, Joe Carnahan, very involved.
Yeah.
And so Joe is the different end of the spectrum where he did put his name on something, but he's very involved.
Yeah.
Oh, so totally.
That's good.
He's living with us now, actually.
Yes.
You know, the shame of the – not the shame, but the issue is Joe had something salient to offer to that pilot. Every single subject that came up, he had something to offer.
Yeah.
And he certainly is a about town who's got stories to tell. And he's the one on there whose name is not familiar to people.
Yeah. Right.
And face, for that matter. And right. As a lot of writer directors or feature
well, we
film world.
We want to do that with
know
the
him
show,
after they
though.
See the
they'll know it after they see him, and the intro will be. Will, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that.
I think it's very important to mix and match talent off air and on air with the pilot, with the show. When the show gets picked up, I think it's very important to have three actors and get in a writer and a director and mix it up. I think that's good.
And a rapper for that. I mean, yeah. He's common as an actor as well, but a rapper, a musician as well.
He's more known for his hip hop, right?
For the hip hop music that the kids seem to like.
Right, right.
This generation, they express themselves through their music.
Oh, Pat Tobias is making me go to Deadline.com, which I never do. I hate Deadline. But you can go to Deadline.com. Oh, God.
Why?
I'm
plugging is there some?
I hate Nikki Fink. I hate her. She doesn't like me either, so it's all good.
Okay.
But no one else likes her.
That's true.
That's a big hub.
Right.
Is Pat telling us that there's news on Deadline.com?
Yes, well, no.
I read religiously, and I love Nikki Fink.
I know you do. Oh, Jim. Jim, that's why we don't talk about Nikki Fink. Jim and I get together. That never comes up.
Okay.
Go to Deadline.com/primetime-pilot-panic, and they have all the updates on. And I know Jim knows as well. He's here every day, I'm sure. Who's writing, who's producing, the status of each new series.
You know what's interesting about that, and it is worth reading, if only because the graphic has the word panic on a red button of a white keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
So the graphic tells everything. But, we could – this is very, very, very inside baseball. We could go on too long about this. But the analysis of why there is a panic illustrates why there is a panic because the analysis is off. And what people find the numbers to mean – is off. So they're panicking about the wrong factors, variables, and of course the panic will be replaced by more panic next year,
so
in my opinion.
By the way, Pat wanted our fan base to know our buddy Mike Royce got another pilot picked up at Fox.
Hey, Mike Royce.
We'll see if that one goes. Then I'll have him on. Maybe I won't. I'll call him if he has a show on the air.
See, like
that's
Nikki
what
Fink,
I'm learning.
You don't
today.
Like him either?
Man.
No, I love Mike Royce.
Okay.
I love Mike Royce. He's been on the show. He's been on twice. He needs to catch up to Jim McCarron.
So I'm three times now.
You are.
Well, I am like Baldwin of your Lord.
No, there's two. There's two three-timers, you and Carnahan.
Oh.
And if you count when Carnahan calls in just to call in and I actually answer phone calls for once, then it's probably more than
so that. I am Steve Martin to his Alec Baldwin?
Yeah,
for
I guess.
For SNL, yeah.
Yes, when we put together the Oscars next
so
year,
he doesn't know me,
yeah.
But let me just tell Joe Carnahan, it's on.
It's on.
As the kids say, it is on.
Okay.
So what pilots, since you're way more into the pilot season than I am, what pilots are you actually looking forward to?
Interestingly, I'm not. Because
you're not.
It's way too early. I mean, I do... keep,
oh, man, this is some insider stuff here. It's too early.
I do keep abreast of it, but right now it's just a lot of words without much direction.
You know why else I can't stand Deadline, but another thing about it is every day they post like 50 new pilots get ordered. Like every day. And
every day, and then every new pilot has four or five separate casting announcements every
right.
day as well.
Every day. I can't keep up with it.
You know, again, when I was at CBS, I would just learn not to pay too. I mean, there's a lot of people paid a lot of money to get more worried about it this time of year than me. It didn't really start to affect me until the end of March, beginning of April every year. And that's when the dust cloud starts settling. Right now, it's just a huge
right.
dust cloud. It's like Wile E. Coyote or whatever that dust cloud image on an animated.
Right.
That's what pilot season is right now. So there's not a whole lot that's showing itself to me.
How much do the networks pay attention to the internet buzz and stuff?
More than they used to.
Definitely.
Yeah, they
significantly
do.
More
so
and more.
If one pilot gets a lot of buzz, it gets announced early in the process. It gets a lot of buzz, and
it won't get it on the air.
Can
but
they push it over the top if it's on the fence?
Sure.
Yeah, if they think, well, this pilot's all right, it could be better. The series is going to probably be better, and then the buzz is really good for it. That could maybe put it on the air.
Well, look at CW. Most of its shows exist on social media first.
Sure.
I mean, that's
right.
what makes them successful. The numbers don't necessarily make them successful in terms of being airing on TV, but
well, it is a network for 15-year-old moody people.
It is a network for girls,
yeah,
for teenage girls. But a lot of its success is born on social media, and you'll get executives on all levels associated with both CBS and CW to tell you that, which is it's fine because we have a successful life off air as well, even if the numbers on air are kind of limited.
So how much is digital content really going to play in the future in your mind?
Huge, and I will...
Because we did our show purposely so we had an hour's extra of footage so we can do digital content.
I will say huge. When I stop
Have a good day, guys.
I will answer that in two different ways. I will say when I left CBS the first time in 2006 and then more so in 2010... The mention of the digital facet of a television show in pilot increased exponentially just in those 4 years. Back in 2005, 2006, it was, is there a digital component to this pilot, mm-hmm. whatever that meant at the time and whatever it would end up meaning. Is there a way that we're going to be able to sell this digitally as well? Is there a digital
sure.
aspect to it? More and more so as the years went on. So, huge. And then I will say, courtesy of The Wrap instead of Deadline.
Yes.
There's a story in which somebody has just been hired. The first hire I'll read it. Lauren, and I don't know her or her name, Zalaznik, has made her first major hire in her new role driving innovation at NBC Universal, bringing in A&E distribution executive Lori Conkling to be, now here's the answer to the question, because her role in the new capacity universe,
okay.
she is now the senior strategist in charge of digital monetization.
Very interesting.
That is now a job title.
That's interesting.
Huh.
Do they know what they're doing yet, though, with digital content?
Are they still feeling their way around in the dark?
I don't know what I'm doing.
Right.
I tried to open a Twitter account today, and I'm not even sure it's live yet. And then I found out my computer wasn't plugged in. Nor, for that matter, was it turned on, typing on a blank screen.
Nor was it a computer.
Nor was it even a computer. It was actually a banana.
Yeah.
And it was peeled. So it was. I'm the wrong guy to ask, and everybody
yeah.
who knows me probably knows that. But what was the question?
Do they know what they're doing with this digital content?
I think,
and what's the answer if they don't?
I think half of them do, half of them don't.
Do you
and
think they need to hire younger people that
are
more technology, media-oriented?
They are.
They are. So that's something that's going on right now.
I would think so. There's a great company named Participant Media.
Yes.
And it's beginning under Evan Shapiro. They are now creating what's being called or hailed, promised as the first television network for the millennials. You know, and what is that? They were born 90 to
right,
whatever.
90 now or 2000.
They came of
whatever.
Age
right.
At the turn of the most recent century, most recent turn of the century. And I'm following their hires, and these are young people. They're not young. They're not teenagers.
Mid
30s, but they're younger.
Younger,
and they're going to be speaking to that generation.
That's smart.
Smartly. and wisely, because they should. I think you, more and more. Listen, it's not as if prior to the digital world you were seeing, you know, a lot of 40-year-olds anyway.
Sure.
I mean, this is a town known for youth.
Sure, but they were more business-oriented. These guys are going to have probably be a little less business-oriented.
yes.
Or, you know.
Creatively and from an executive and business standpoint, based on what I read in my favorite website called Deadline.com, from Nikki Fink, whom I love, younger and younger, and they're starting to get it, even if it means we have to start hiring people who do get it.
Sure.
One of my favorite anecdotes, and it's not really telling tales out of school, although it's telling tales out of school, is when this we were on the cusp of this new digital media and this new digital world about 10 years ago. My office at CBS at the time was adjacent to that of the head of business affairs. In the morning, one particular afternoon of a morning, when there was a press release that went out from CBS that was going to get involved in a particular digital environment or digital aspect or something to do with digi-somethings, the afternoon came, and the head of business affairs, I heard her yelling, not in a mean but in a forceful way to somebody on the phone, to one of her lawyers under her purview, and she was yelling, "You better figure out how to do it because we just announced we're going to."
That sounds like TV.
And I think that was the world at the time, and it was what everybody was doing, both in TV and probably in film as well, and the learning curve is such that now it's a part of our day-to-day.
That's great. Let me ask you then, digital content is...
I hate the word content, but
I know,
ahead.
Right. I know you do.
Content
is your least favorite words next to journey.
Journey and content are my Nikki Fink.
I know. So do things like the Emmys and the Television Academy merge and start accepting digital television shows or digital content, or do they have to – are the streamies just going to have to build themselves up to be for digital television shows and digital content?
Your friend of mine, Ken Hommel, can answer that better than I, because I raised the question in cyberspace the other day, and he, being Ken Hommel, the smartest guy I know about television, forwards me right away a 2006 – he'll correct me if I'm wrong – but a 2006 – amendment to the Emmy rules that allowed digital content to
so
be...
House of Cards can be nominated by the Emmys.
Lilyhammer could have been nominated.
Lilyhammer,
it would have been the
right.
first made for cable.
That's Stevie Van Zandt's show, yeah.
New Media, that's the first... It would have been the first one nominated. I think, though, House of Cards, to me, is the first, because I think Lilyhammer was an acquisition.
Sure.
House of Cards is made just for Netflix.
Right.
And... yeah, I said to my, you know, I said to whomever listens to me at my house where I work at an office by myself, you know, is Kevin Spacey going to be nominated for a lead actor streaming?
Sure.
You know, or a Webby.
Yeah, right.
But even though his show will not appear on something called television, this thing that was created 100 years ago and it was introduced in 1947, this thing called television does not exist when it comes to House of Cards. He's still eligible.
So the streamies and the Emmys will be fighting over Kevin's affection.
Ultimately, the streamies will be the Cable Ace Awards to the Emmys, and they will be folded in
Kevin
years.
Kevin Pollak is a Cable Ace Award winner, okay?
Winner.
So is his wife.
So is James Lipton.
Okay. Kevin has a wife now? Oh, well, they're divorced.
Are they
divorced?
Lucy.
Yeah, Pollak and her divorced.
Oh, sorry, ex-wife. Yeah. Lucy, she was good. Not necessarily the news.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Well, don't act so mean about her. Have you met her? She seemed quite nice.
Yeah,
but,
whatever.
Why am I the Pollyanna suddenly of Burbank?
I don't really care about the Kevin Pollak family household.
The Cable Ace Awards, the streamies will go the way of the Cable Ace Awards, I'm betting. But look, it's all...
The Blockbuster Awards.
We're living in a world where if you consider this Major League Baseball, eventually we're going to have 400 teams and there'll be no such thing as a World Series anyway.
Would Blockbuster still be in business if they didn't do their stupid award
show?
Good
analogy.
Now let's blame it on Aaron Spelling.
Aaron Spelling.
All right. Let's just sum up today. 103 Ways to Get into TV by 102 Did Plenty. That's Jim McCarron's book, which you can now download off of Amazon or buy. $15 to buy the hard copy, $3 to buy the digital copy on the e-books or the Nook, the Kindle.
It's on Amazon Kindle, both available on Amazon.com.
You could go to our website, click on Jim McCarron's show for today. The link's in there.
And you can find me on Facebook and ask me directly.
And then your new book and the release date.
I'd say within a month. I'm also The Sheep is What Makes It Funny. If at some point I'll tell you the story behind that, if there's time. But the subhead pretty much says it all.
Do you want to tell it before we go?
Yes.
You just tease people. And getting you to come to Burbank is a pain in the ass.
Yeah, so I didn't know Taste of Chicago meant I drove there.
Yeah.
Do you know how long it took me to drive here from Manhattan Beach?
Yes, I imagine
I
it was
shaved
probably
on the way. My book went into second printing on the way. I'm still a better driver than most. My first development year at CBS, 1994, a very talented writer named Victor Fresco, writer-producer, he's still working. He was working on Evening Shade at the time. He had a deal.
Lonnie Anderson, who we saw the other night. Those names.
Yeah.
Evening Shade.
I saw Lonnie Anderson the other night.
You're doing a Burt Reynolds to get to Lonnie Anderson?
Yeah.
She wasn't on Evening Shade.
I know, but she was on Burt's first show, which is, you know, that's close enough.
Close enough. Victor Fresco was developing another show to follow up Evening Shade. He's a good guy. And I know this is going to sound strange, and everybody's going to raise their eyebrows, and they're going to say, my God, TV, what is it up to? And da-da-da. Although now I could probably get up a meeting in a heartbeat. But at the time, it was an innovative project featuring an all-human cast led by an animated sheep. It was an office comedy. Everybody in the office was a human. The head of the office was an animated sheep.
This was like the year after Baby Bob, wasn't it?
Well before Baby Bob.
It was before Baby Bob.
Well before.
So they didn't learn from this. Okay, but continue.
No, by the way, it was a really good pilot.
Yeah.
And a really good script, more important, to the point where when production began on the pilot, the head of production and CBS Productions came into a development meeting, said to the head of CBS at the time, Jeff Sagansky, and that's important. That name to drop is important in a minute. I'll tell you why. But it's expensive to make animation. So I don't know anything. I'm a virgin. It's my first development year.
We send all to Vietnam, and they do it real cheap. But yes.
Correct, I suppose. Can't speak to that, Your Honor.
Burma.
So I'm new to the company. I'm new to everybody there. They know something more than I do. I just keep quiet. And the guy in charge of the show says to Jeff Sagansky, the pilot for this animated show is going well. But, you know, animation is very expensive. It's going to be a hell of an expensive show to do on a weekly basis. This script works so well, he says, going one step further to Jeff Sagansky, the president of CBS Entertainment. This script works so well that we might consider doing it with Jeff Sagansky. Slams his hand. He's not a violent man. He wasn't violent that day either. But he's not what you would call an animated, excitable guy. Slams his hand down on the table and interrupts him mid-sentence, knowing where he's going, which is, let's drop the animation from the pilot. Slams his hands down on the table, and he says, no, the sheep is what makes it funny. And I wrote that down the minute I heard it.
You wrote a lot of things
That's
down.
That's good.
I wrote everything down.
You heard it.
But I also sought his permission last year to use that as the title. I knew it would be the title of the memoir.
Nice. Wow, that, yeah.
You're so nice. You could have been the gossipiest gossip
you think
king ever.
He would have remembered himself saying that all those years ago.
He didn't remember saying it, but gentleman and class act that he is, because I didn't want this to turn into one of those titles. Occasionally you read an inside baseball story where the title comes from a memo that makes fun of the person who wrote the memo.
Right.
You know, the case in point being somebody put together a book of famous network notes and network memos
and named it after
the worst network note ever conceived back in the 60s when a CBS executive circled a line in a script for My Favorite Martian, sent the script back with a note that said a Martian wouldn't say that. That was his note. And it became the title of a book called A Martian Wouldn't Say That.
That's great.
And I didn't want this to be one of those, which is making fun of somebody. I wanted it to represent how television can ride and fall on something you never thought you'd ever hear in a million years.
Right.
All I care about is making
that a show could be built or lost, careers can be made or lost one sentence, the sheep is what makes it funny.
That's true.
Right.
So I sent that to Jeff Sagansky. I said, can I use it as a title? And he said, absolutely, you could use it. He said, 20 years later, I would say the same thing.
Man, that's the scary thing is, too. You just said it. That comment can make or break a career.
Yeah.
The sheep is what makes it funny.
Well,
someone could be in the poorhouse over that comment
over that,
not going well.
That is... That's where the title comes from, but then the subtitle was How I Found Myself in Television, which I think explains itself. The other story in the book that's not part of the title is somebody who was in a development meeting, and we were trying to find the lead for a new drama about a guy who was going to be a lawyer, 1995. And everybody's throwing names back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. This is three administrations ago at CBS. And again, sitting there quietly taking notes. Nobody knows that I'm writing stuff down. And the head of drama development, a really cool guy named Jonathan Levin, after what seemed like hours of names being bandied about who's going to star in the show about this middle-aged lawyer, he denies doing this, by the way, but I wrote it down. I've since seen him, and he said, I've never said that. He puts his head in his hand, and to nobody in particular, he shakes his head, and to nobody in particular, he says, you know you're in trouble with a new pilot when you're considering both Albert Finney and Bob Uecker for the lead role. It went to Tom Conti.
That's pretty amazing.
It was canceled after seven episodes.
Well, Uecker's just such a better actor, though.
Right.
It's just ridiculous.
It was an amazing moment to think of both Bob Uecker and Albert Finney being considered for this role.
That's fantastic.
I do love Bob Uecker. I can't laugh too loud at that.
I love Tom Conti.
Tom Conti's great.
But the show was canceled.
Well, Jim, you are having an exciting year. We got the book here, 103 Ways to Get Into the Business.
Thank you for mentioning it.
Plus Me Who Did. And then you have the new book, The Sheep's What Makes It Funny.
Correct.
And you're an executive producer on a pilot.
Called Dine and Dash.
To be a hit television
show. Yes.
Where else are you going to hear Carol Burnett and Episiotomy in the
same
show?
We'll enjoy more seasons than The Simpsons.
I hope so.
It's a really good pilot.
I think it is. I think we have something exciting going on here, and I don't think there's anything on TV like it.
It ended up being a really good conversation, and you referenced a lot of things that people want to talk about, which is what's up with these careers, and how do you keep a straight face, and how do you get jobs?
And I'm very excited to announce we threw the Mel Gibson conversation back into the edit as well.
We did?
I won that argument.
Love it.
I won that argument because I know there's going to be old broads in the kitchen that hear the name Mel Gibson and are going to run out to their TV.
I wrestled with it, and when it airs, people can wrestle back with us. I think it was I don't think it was – okay. It ended up being germane to the conversation, even though it was superfluous in dropping the name.
It was.
It was. Thank you.
It was germane yet superfluous.
Thank you.
I tried to find a way to go back myself and say, can this subject, which should stay in the show, can this subject still have relevance if we take the name Mel Gibson out? And we couldn't.
No.
And it wouldn't.
No, it wouldn't work. It wouldn't work. And it's the same thing with all the names. There is plenty of name dropping on Dine and Dash.
You think we do a lot of name dropping on this show?
You know what I love about Dine and Dash is it is turned into what my friends and I do when we go out. It is we talk a little shop, see how everyone's lives are, drink. I don't drink.
Have a laugh at each other's expense.
And then a lot of gossip.
And get asked to leave.
And a lot of gossip and get asked to leave.
But meanwhile, the five people at Dine and Dash were in Beverly Hills. We're at a pizza joint in Burbank.
I know. I gotta do one from here.
Although a good one.
I don't know how we're going to, but.
Yeah.
We got a good pizza joint. We got to figure that out.
That will present...
We'll get Montaigne on. I don't know if I can get him, though.
That will present Hamza with the most difficult...
Not that there's anything wrong with Burbank.
No, nothing's
wrong
with
Burbank. Just pack a lunch if you're driving here.
You know what? Not only that, but the parking situation in Burbank and Studio City is the worst ever. But
really?
Don't get me started.
This from the guy terrible. Who could have walked here today?
It's terrible.
Not I'm going to worry about your parking?
I could have walked
here. I left early Sunday to come here. My clothes went out of style. On the drive here.
My clothes went out of style long before the drive here. Well, I'm very grateful that you could come on. You know I'll have you on anytime you want.
I'm grateful. Well, I'm gonna keep up with Alec Baldwin to my Steve Martin.
Yeah, you're my Charles Nelson Reilly at the moment.
Oh, what a wonderful reference.
It was gonna be Ken Campbell, but...
I have never felt worse in my life.
That would be.
It took 24 years of living in L.A.
to get that, thrown at you.
To get Charles Nelson Reilly thrown at me. Although I do have a Charles Nelson Reilly story.
Do you?
The former head of CBS Drama Development, a really nice guy who's a good producer now named Gene Stein. He's with Berman Braun. He was our drama guy, again, a million years ago at CBS, the year that Murder One, the Stephen Bochco show, was being renewed.
With Daniel
Benzali was in the cast, at the head of the cast for the first year. It was renewed, and he was to be replaced. It was a big drama at the time, behind-the-scenes drama, that they're replacing the lead. He ended up being replaced by Anthony LaPaglia. The show failed after another year anyway. But the big news that week was Daniel Benzali is leaving Murder One or getting kicked off Murder One. And Gene Stein was wondering, do they have a replacement yet? Now I'm telegraphing the lead here, because the joke, because he came in one morning. We were in New York setting the schedule for the new fall season. And I said, big news out of ABC, Gene. They finally announced who's the new prosecutor or district attorney on Murder One, who's replacing Daniel Benzali. He says, who? His eyes are wide open. Who? And I said, Charles Nelson Reilly.
You were fucking with
him. And he looked at me, and then I looked back at him, and I said, guilty.
All right. You said it.
That's
that.
Good.
Okay.
Let's take one phone call, because it's Mikey, you there?
Mikey, you there? Yeah, I'm here.
Turn down your radio. Don't hear me.
Is this better?
I think so.
All right.
This is Michael Vincenzo Terzo for our listeners who are used to hearing Mikey on the show.
Spoiler.
Mikey, you want to say hello to Jim?
I did want to say hello to Jim. I finally got to meet Jim during the shoot over at Diamond Dash when we were shooting, and it was nice to finally put a real face to the name instead of just a picture on his Facebook page.
I remember that, and it was nice to meet you, and you should be at the Free Italian Festival.
I really wish I could be, but unfortunately it's a few miles away from where I'm at.
Oh.
Yeah.
You live in Manhattan Beach, too?
Other direction, like maybe another 2,000 miles, but it's all right.
Is it going to snow tonight, Mikey? I hear it's going to snow in Chicago. 6 inches?
You know, if it is, it's going to be the most snow we've gotten all year. Actually, last night, it was March, Chicago. And last night was probably colder than it's been all year.
Caesar's flying to Chicago on Virgin Airlines tomorrow night. You can catch him at LAX if you're a stalker or a fan.
Yeah. Why don't you give the flight number, too?
It's 4 flights. You're just going to put two and two together. Virgin doesn't have that many flights coming in and out at 4. 4 p.m. from LAX to Chicago. You can catch Cesar Marconi. But Caesar's flying in tomorrow night, and there's supposed to be 6 inches of snow overnight.
Oh.
I had no idea.
Two disasters hitting the city in one day.
Don't we have a caller?
Yes. Mikey, you're the only guest we've ever had that's requested you get more airtime, Jim McCarran.
When did I make that request? I don't know.
Oh, Jim just made it.
I made it because I said, don't we have a caller with a question?
Yeah.
Jim,
yes. Yeah.
What's your question?
Yeah, what's your question?
Pocatello, Idaho.
Yeah, right. Hello.
NC, Florida, you're on.
You hear today, Mikey?
Say what?
How much of the show did you hear today?
About the last 20 minutes. I just cut off work.
So you missed all the good Dine and Dash talk. You missed all the gossip. I was just explaining to Jim why I love Dine and Dash so much, because it's like going out to dinner with me, you, and the guys, where we talk about our lives for a little bit, talk about business, and then it's a lot of gossip.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You know, we just try to recreate what we do ourselves, and you try to recreate what you do when you go out with your friends, and that's get people comfortable, have some laughs, and just be real, and let your hair down, and just have a real conversation, and I think you executed that greatly.
I can't do cheese.
Lee's trying to come up with something really witty to say to you right now. I can tell. I can see it in his face. He's got a one-liner brewing.
It's all right. We're okay.
Mikey, I know you missed the first. I know you missed the first part of the show, so I just wanted to thank you for calling Lucy yesterday. We're all good on the Lucy Lawless front. She's happy. It seems her people are happy. We're okay.
Okay, good.
So you and I put out a fire. She tweeted me yesterday. She said I'm dead to her, and I'm assuming that's good news.
Yeah.
She's a good girl.
So thank you for helping put out that fire.
No problem.
There is a future for you as a manager in this business.
Well, I appreciate that, and I look forward to any and all opportunities.
Oh, very good. Do you have anything you need to say to Jim before we get running here?
What was the name of that diner that you guys all went to that I missed out on? Was it Stella's?
Oh, Stella's Diner in Chicago. Yeah. They're twice together.
Oh, on the Broadway?
Yeah, the day you met Lenny, too. Yeah, on Broadway. On Broadway, that's right.
Correct.
Stella's
is Lenny.
Good. Yeah, Lenny, Big Len.
From The Sopranos.
Yeah.
Right. That's right.
Yep.
So, Jim, I got to ask you, do you frequent that joint when you're in Chicago?
Only when I'm having lunch with Matt Aaron. I had actually lived in that area. I live in a different area each time I go to Chicago. I lived in the area, and Matt suggested it, so I didn't really know the area that well.
I'm a big diner guy, as Mikey knows. I love the diners.
We like the diners,
too.
Yeah. Very much so.
Keith, thank you for putting out that Lucy Lawless fire, though, helping out with that. That was much needed.
Hey, man. It's no big deal. Most people forget that, you know, I think publicists do a job that they're supposed to do to protecting their clients. And, they were jumping all over it.
Wow, you belong in this business, pal. Yeah. This is 104 ways to get in the business right here.
Yeah.
I think there's 6 inches of something else in Chicago.
Oh, I could have said so many dirty things there, but I'm not.
On the ground. From the ground.
Right. Mikey, let me tell you this, though, pal. When I called Pat Tobias yesterday, and Pat told me how, you know, Lucy's clan was not very happy, I told Pat, I got Mikey Terzo calling her, and Pat was like, Pat's exact quote was, "Oh, that makes me feel a whole lot better."
Yeah, right.
Pat's a Muppet?
He is Mickey Mouse.
He is, yeah.
In the body of an Irishman.
Actually, you know what? I'm gonna start a company, and it's gonna be a 1-800 hotline. And what's gonna happen is that when you know young children can't fall asleep. The parents, because they're working all the time, I'm going to give them an 800 number, and it's going to go directly to Pat, and then Pat's going to have a collection of children's stories that he can read to the kids to help them fall asleep.
In his Mickey Mouse voice?
Yes, it'd be one. I want to have him like narrate books for me, so I can just listen to him talk.
Diabolical,
what
complex,
an Italian.
And strange.
Yeah, you're such an Italian. You're always trying to sell something.
Yeah.
You're just like me.
You're
dropping names.
Like Pascal.
Selling things left and right.
Well... You know, it's like I asked a girl out at the gym the other night, and apparently I did it in a way that was natural to me, and she was so caught off guard by it. She didn't say yes, but she didn't know how to say no. And so it took her like 30 seconds to come up with an answer. I don't know. I guess this is how we do.
It's how we do.
God.
This is how we do.
I would say you need to write that story down and record it, but I think a court stenographer will take care of that job for you.
Yeah, right. What?
Plug next week.
There's nothing to plug. I don't know what to plug yet.
Next week we are going to show and you
should listen
to it.
I'm interviewing Corey Stoll Friday. I don't know when we're going to do a show for it. We're going to probably, Lee and I may do one Friday night if he's
which
not
Corey
in San Diego. He's the hot one.
Oh, okay.
The not dead one.
Okay.
Who are we talking about?
The not dead one and not the frog.
Yeah, right. Not the frog.
So the third Corey Stoll from House of Cards and Law and Order Los Angeles
and
Midnight
Boys.
In Paris. And Lost Boys, right. I'm going to tell him that Friday. Because
right.
It's going to be weird because Caesar's flying out. You got work. It's going to be me and Corey Stoll just talking to each other on the phone, like one-on-one. It reminds me of the days I used to tape interviews at my house.
Right.
But my mom would open the door and be like,
bring the laundry up.
Yeah, when are you going to lunch?
Yeah.
And so I don't have that. But
Mom, I'm doing a show. Like all Rupert Pupkin. I'm doing a show, Mom.
I know we are going to be here Tuesday. And I know we're going to be here Wednesday at Taste Chicago in Burbank. I don't know where our guests are Tuesday. I guess I can tell you our guests Wednesday. It's Jacob Wasaki from Pitch Perfect and Terry and Fat Kid Rules the World. Terry is one of Lee and I's most underseen great movies.
Yes.
And Wayne Fetterman, who is a pal, a writer, comedian, actor, Wayne Fetterman, is coming in to promote his film festival. which you do need to pay to get into. But we'll talk to Wayne about that. Sarah Silverman premieres the film festival with her favorite film, Crimes and Misdemeanors. We're going to get into that Wednesday. Tuesday, who knows who we're going to have. I'm hearing rumors. So join us Tuesday and Wednesday. Jim McCarron's 103 Ways to Get Into the Business.
There by 102
Who Did, plus
Thank
me.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the
Thank
time
you.
And the interest.
Thank you, and you know anytime. Anytime.
And drop in 03 Hollywood to Taste Chicago, Arlene Montaigne, and Joe's fabulous place where you can get the deep dish, the Maxwell Street Polish, the fabled Italian beef sandwich, and
you can get Joan of Arcadia DVDs. No, you can't.
Yeah,
Jim,
right,
look. Jim
right.
was like, really?
Really?
No. He should, though. Joan of Arcadia DVDs.
Right.
Get them in here.
Yeah.
No one's heard of it.
Cross promotion.
That's great. That'll go over real well. Can't wait to see Joe Fry. No one's heard of Joan of Arcadia.
Right.
When I come in for my sweet pepper and egg and clam chowder, my Catholic Fridays here
Take
at
Take a picture
Chicago.
Of it. Put it on Facebook.
All right. Thank you, people. We'll see you next week.
Okay. Thank you very much.
What is that?